Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, as the case may be, across all these many time zones, from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains in the west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south, well into South America, north to the pole, and worldwide. On the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM. Good morning, everybody. No, I am not dead. Despite the rumors circulating on the internet, I am not dead. Close. I've been pretty sick, as you know, and I'm going to be soliciting experts on airline travel. And I'm going to do a whole show on airline travel and disease. At any rate, I want to welcome WLTG AM in Panama City, Florida. 1430 on the AM dial in Panama City. Good morning down there. Good to have you with us. You'll find out what the program is about as we move along. I'd like to welcome KBLU in Yuma, Arizona. Yuma, Arizona, 560 on the dial. Welcome to the program. I'd like to welcome KSWD in Seward, Alaska. They would be 950 on the AM dial. Great to have you along. All right, coming up tonight, and in a moment, Dr. Stephen M. Greer, probably the world's foremost authority on the subject of extraterrestrial intelligence, and runs an organization, called CSETI.
Now we take you back to the night of February 21st, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Dr. Stephen M. Greer is widely regarded as the world's foremost authority on the subject of extraterrestrial intelligence, ETI, and is the founder and international director of the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, or CSETI. A lifetime member of Alpha Omega Alpha, the nation's most prestigious medical honor society, Dr. Greer is an emergency physician and former chairman of the Department of Emergency Medicine at Caldwell Memorial Hospital in North Carolina. Dr. Greer, as director of CSETI, has led research teams throughout the world investigating the existence of ETI, extraterrestrial intelligence. On several occasions, has successfully established preliminary contact and communication with extraterrestrial spacecraft at close range. He has met with and provided briefings for senior members of government, military, and intelligence operations in the U.S. and around the world, including senior CIA officials, Joint Chiefs of Staff, White House staff, senior members of Congress and congressional committees, senior UN leadership and diplomats, senior military officials in the United Kingdom and Europe, and cabinet-level staff members of the Japanese government, among others. Here he is, Dr. Stephen Greer. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good to have you. Since you're an emergency room doctor, before we get on off into other subjects, have you any experience, doctor, with people who travel in airplanes and get sick?
Well, sure. I travel about 100,000 miles a year, and so I know firsthand, and I've actually had to take care of a couple of emergencies on transatlantic flights, including a woman who had a massive stroke, but certainly there's a high risk of spread of infectious diseases on airplanes because of the close proximity and the recirculation of the air, but that's another subject, but right, I think that you should get a lot of rest, perhaps, and take some extra vitamin C to help fight off the viral illnesses,
right,
and be sure you get lots of rest when you're traveling.
Sounds like standard advice. All right, good. Anyway, the reason we have you here tonight, you're involved in a sort of a motivational thing, trying to get people motivated, aren't you?
Well, yes, it's that's part of it, and the reason I'd like to speak to your listeners tonight is there are several things to achieve, but primarily, and the thing that I think most people there would be interested in learning an update on, is the SeaCity Project Starlight Initiative, which is a program designed to effect a global disclosure on the existence of extraterrestrial intelligence and the implications of that disclosure. And we are in the phase now where we are collecting firsthand U.S. government and other world government military and intelligence workers and aerospace workers who have firsthand knowledge of extraterrestrial events or projects or programs, who would be willing to join in a coalition of folks to come forward and disclose what they know to the world at a high-level event. We have been briefing members of Congress on this. I've briefed a senior U.S. officials and others around the world on this matter. And we have identified quite a large number of these types of witnesses, but we would like to identify more of them for two reasons. One is that there is definitely safety in numbers. And number two, there's also increasing credibility when you have interlocking pieces of the puzzle that come forward where it becomes a corroborating effect.
Well, how have you done so far? If you had to go today, what would you be going with? And I don't need names. I'm just curious. Yes. Numbers.
Numbers. Well, we're going to have a meeting in Washington soon to ask members of Congress to do exactly this, and that is to hold open hearings on the subject. We would be able to produce around the 70 or 80 firsthand witnesses to these events, as well as people who have worked in military and intelligence and military industrial complex settings dealing directly with this subject. And here, when I say directly, I mean not someone who said, you know, my grandpappy saw a dead ET on the desert floor in 1940-something. We're talking people who have directly been in the radar room or been on retrieval operations or who have done pursuits in jet aircraft or who have seen things as an astronaut or a cosmonaut or who have been at facilities where they were working on extraterrestrial technologies and things of this sort.
Oh, that's very serious. Very serious.
That's very serious. And my problem is that, quite frankly, and one of the difficult things I've had to deal with is that having been the point of contact to several dozen of these type of people, I'm now the person who's sitting on an extraordinary amount of information, and I hate to say it, secrets, which I think should not be held secret. And so what we want to do is to move this forward at the highest possible level in a setting that has the gravitas and the credibility so that a definitive disclosure on this subject could be effected in the very near future. Now, we feel that for this to happen in the best way possible, it would occur through open hearings in the Congress, and emphasize the word open. It's not going to do any good to have a covert hearing process or a secret hearing process,
right,
so that this can just be vetted by members of Congress. It would be educational for them, but the rest of the world would remain uninformed. What we feel needs to happen is perhaps a period of behind-the-doors vetting of the subject, followed by an open disclosure process and hearing process, either through the Congress or through the United Nations. And we are currently working on both of these fronts, both with UN officials and in the Congress.
Of the two, which do you consider to be likely the more receptive?
It's very difficult. I believe that if it were not for interference from covert projects that have a very long arm, we would probably be able to do this most readily through the United Nations. But I do know personally and without question, unambiguously, that there has been attempts to thwart, squash, and derail any such event through the United Nations. And quite frankly, this is the first time I've said this publicly. We're very concerned about that, and if not a little dismayed.
Can you give us any details of that behind-the-scenes manipulation?
Well, let's just put it this way. There have been discussions which have been promising in the direction of, at the very highest levels, in the United Nations community to have a disclosure conference at the United Nations. But unfortunately, there has been interference where some of these officials have been visited and shown materials where they are being instructed not to do anything on this subject. I find that deplorable but predictable. A couple of years ago, I don't think the UFO community knows this, and certainly the public doesn't, I was invited to give an address at the UN on this subject. And the topic that I chose was the foundations of interplanetary peace and how you might create interplanetary relations. And some very high-level UN people were coming to this. And it was interesting because a couple of days before the event, there were some notices put inside the offices at the UN, and they were all torn down within hours. And nobody knows what happened to them or who did this. But we know that that has happened, and it's very disconcerting. But it's also very predictable because anyone who has any insight into the subject realizes this is one of the great secrets of the century,
sure.
If not the millennium.
Without naming these people, do you have any sense of the kind of material they're being shown that would convince them that any public exposure is a bad idea?
I don't think they're being shown that it's a bad idea from the point of view of the ramifications of a disclosure. I believe that they're simply being told, don't do it.
Or else.
With some implied negative ramifications if they were to. And so there's some discouragement going on that level. And this is very worrisome because we have been briefing senior Clinton administration and congressional people since December of 1993, and this may be a shock to some of your listeners, but this has been a very intense, long-term, behind-the-scenes project.
What kind of reception, Doctor, have you been getting from the Clinton administration?
Well, the people that I have met with and that people on my team have met with have been open to hearing about the subject, and to be honest with you, there's not a question of whether or not the subject is true. And this may be a shock to some people, contrary to some public statements that have been made. There's no question that the matter is real. The question is, what do we do about it, and how do you get this thing resolved, and how do you resolve the complex issues surrounding covert management and extra secret, super secret management of something which, in the words of Barry Goldwater, when I met with him, said it should have never been handled this way. But now that it has been, you have a conundrum insofar as you have programs and infrastructure which is in place, which arguably is sitting on extraordinary technologies and also extraordinary power. And how do you get that turned around and put back into a normal oversight process in our government with the proper checks and balances that you would expect in a republic and a democratic government?
Well, to a degree, our government's power comes from the maintenance of secrets.
Well, that may be true at this juncture, but I think that being the descendant of one of the founders of the United States, people who fought in the American Revolution, and somewhat of a student of the Constitution, I differ with those who say that is something which has evolved, and I think Eisenhower warned us of this when he gave his speech where he said, beware the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that in a certain degree of secrecy you would always expect in an advanced society and even in ancient societies. But when you have a subject like this, which is of immense importance to the world, and which is being seen by people all over the world, and yet which continues to be shrouded in the most extraordinary layers of secrecy, so much so that, if I can share this little anecdotal story, imagine sitting across the conference table at a meeting which has been set up with a sitting and current member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and briefing this individual on the subject, and the person blinks and looks at you and says, Doctor, I have no doubt that what you're saying is true, but in my many years of being on the Senate Intelligence Committee, I have never heard of this matter, and I have never been briefed about this matter. Now, there's a problem here, and the man, I felt there was no prevarication, in these statements. And I'll say something else which may be equally startling to people, is that, and I'll say this with some confidence, I'm quite sure that I'm the only UFO researcher in the world who has had a nearly three-hour meeting with a sitting and empowered director of Central Intelligence. And I have.
On this subject?
On this subject, specifically before this subject. And I know that this is an extraordinary statement. I have the bona fides to back this up, and someday it should all come out in a very interesting book and movie. But without going any further into who and which one and at what time, let me just say that the subject is taken very seriously. The problem is that how do you put people back in the loop on this, and how do you get a disclosure on this done so that it, on the one hand, is credible and scientific, on the other hand, does not cause a constitutional crisis and does not cause undue alarm in the populace. I think it can be done. That's what the strategy that we have put together is intended to do that.
All right. Can we back up just a little bit? You said something that was quite extraordinary. You said that it is simply a given that they exist, that contact has been made, and you can prove that through a series of witnesses. Fine. That's a given for you, but perhaps not the audience, and that bears at least a question or two.
Sure, of course.
How would you back up that statement? I mean, that it's a given that contact has been made.
Well, you have to take the weight of the evidence, and this is something which I think one of the great misfortunes in how this has been handled in the civilian sector is that you cannot take one witness, I don't care if it's an astronaut or anyone else, or one case, whether it's Roswell or the Belgian event. You've got to take, you must assemble, and this is what we're working to do, and I hope people in your listening audience can help us do this. You must assemble the best scientific evidence, metal samples of extraterrestrial origin, technological items of extraterrestrial origin. We do have access to some of these. You must put together the best photographic, videotape, government documents. You must put together the best cases that have been ever occurred, radar cases, pilot cases. And then you must identify those, call them whistleblowers, if you will, or witnesses who have been in military or private contractor situations where they have had direct involvement with the subject. And these are people who are credible and who are willing to testify under oath to Congress with penalty of perjury and go into jail if they were to lie, stand up and say, I will testify about this subject.
Are these people who are under penalty of going to jail if they tell the truth as well? In other words, a lot of them no doubt signed security statements.
Well, yes, but as you know, or you may know this, that in November we wrote a position paper stating that those security oaths were null and void. And we are taking the specific legal position that these people now should come forward and join together in a coalition to speak what they know about this subject in a public setting, choosing it very carefully, of course, because the nature of these programs are such that they are outside of the legal bounds of the Constitution. They are extra-constitutional because they do not have the proper checks, balances, and oversight required by the U.S. Constitution. Ergo, any security oaths which have been taken in support of such an illegal operation are themselves illegal. Perforce, they are non-binding. And this is the position that we are making, is that essentially these security oaths are at this juncture are null and void. And we have written this in a position paper, sent it to the White House and to the CIA director, amongst others, and asked them to correct us if we were wrong in this assessment by the 1st of January of 97, and that if they did not correct that position, that we would move forward with efforts to disclose the testimony of these witnesses. Now, January 1st, 1997 came and went. There was no corrective position issued. We did hear through contacts and sources that there would be no response to that and that they would allow us to pretty much go forward and just observe what kind of progress we could make on our own. And I think that this is rather encouraging, by the way, because this went not only through the back door into the White House, but it also went through the front door return receipt requested. It went to the CIA director, the Secretary of Defense, the head of the Intelligence Committee, and the Senate.
Do you generally take that to mean that they are prepared to proceed with disclosure and they're going to allow you to be the point man in that?
Well, we take it to mean that they chose not to say that these people could not step forward. And
all
I think
right.
that's very significant.
So do I. All right, Doctor, hold on. We'll be right back to you. Dr. Stephen Greer from CSETI is my guest. Some pretty heady stuff.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997.
My guest is Dr. Stephen Greer, CSETI's Stephen Greer. And Dr. Greer is preparing to go in front of congressional representatives this spring with literally an army of people who have been on the inside, who have worked on craft, who have evidence that they, whoever they are here. We'll talk a little bit about that in a moment.
Now we take you back to the night of February 21st, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Back now to Dr. Stephen Greer. Doctor, here's a fax that just came in.
Yes.
Art, I'm very encouraged to hear what your guest is describing, but I have two questions. One, our elected officials are idiots. They're politicians. All they care about is getting reelected. Why does Dr. Greer believe that any of them would risk looking silly by talking about the UFO subject? I have a very hard time believing they would actually hold hearings.
Well, of course, historically they have in the past, both in 1966 and 1968. Now, you know, your listener may be quite correct. There may be no one willing to do this. And let me say what we have in store in case that happens.
All right.
If the Congress and the White House do not do something constructive on this subject, we will do everything we can to see that either through the UN or some other suitable international event, the same information, witnesses, and data are presented to the public and to the public media. Now, there are ramifications to that. Obviously, if it goes outside of the chain of command and outside of the channels of the U.S. government, there could be concerns about the effect it would have on our government. But I think, you know, you have to understand, we have been working on this for over 3 years, 3.5 years. And we have concluded that if in 1997 there's not positive forward momentum in the Congress and in the administration to do something definitive on this subject, then we will need to take it to the public through some other venue. But we feel that for the sake of doing this well and doing it in the safest and highest way possible, that we need to give our elected officials a chance to respond and a chance to regain control of the subject and to be involved in a disclosure of this magnitude. Now, if they choose not to, then that's their choice. We can't control that. And I think you have to be somewhat detached from that and say, well, it's up to them. We're going to do the best we can and make the most convincing case we can. And beyond that, there's really not much we can do. We can't force them to do this. But what we can do is resolve, both as a group of witnesses who are government witnesses who know about the UFO subject, as well as a group of researchers who have a great deal of evidence on the matter, is to then take it either through the UN or through some other nation or through some other public disclosure event, even if it has to be a privatized event, mm-hmm. in conjunction with other think tanks or some other institute of some renown.
All right.
So, I mean, there are other ways this can be done, and your listener actually was very wise to make that point. But what I would say is that we want to at first give them the chance to say no. And they can't say no until they at least have heard the truth and met these witnesses and seen the evidence. Then if they turn their back on the subject, then we can say, look, I will be able with a clear conscience get on Larry King or Ted Koppel and say, look, we offered this to the White House and to the Congress. They met these people. They knew they were real. They saw the evidence. They saw the documents. They saw the photographs and videotapes and analysis of metal samples and everything else. And they still chose to do nothing. And now we're taking it to another venue. But see, what I don't want to be accused of is trying to grandstand the U.S. government.
Sure.
I would rather see this done through the appropriate channels in the highest and best and safest way possible. But, you know, again, I think your listener is very is sort of prescient in the sense that one of the points I was going to make next is that we need to resolve to get this information out by whatever means we can, and that we need to triage this like I do in the emergency department. Okay, here's the Congress and White House. If they won't act, the UN offer there. If they won't act, offer it through some other nation or some other prestigious institute or think tank. If that can't happen, privatize it totally. Now, you know, but it's something that you have to give people a chance to respond by educating them, and that's what we're trying to do this spring. We're trying to set up a situation where these members of Congress who have not been informed on this subject can be given extraordinary evidence, but also meet these extraordinary witnesses. And then if they choose to turn their back on the subject, that's their choice.
But at least you've moved to the inside first. All right.
At least we've tried to do it the correct way.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Stephen Greer. Where are you, please?
Thank you. This is Bruce calling in. KTNW.
Bruce, I can barely hear you. You're going to have to yell into your phone.
I'll get back into the phone. Is that a little better?
Yes, it is.
Well, this I'm calling from KTNW country up in Oregon.
Yes, sir.
Question for Dr. Greer. It would seem to me that it's unclear as to your purpose and objective of going forward with specifically the Congress. It would seem that if there indeed had been some covert plan of government to keep this contact with extraterrestrials secret, that could have occurred with other nations of the world. It appears to be rather a parochial view to think only the U.S. government has done that. Now, you alluded briefly to the fact that you would be going to the UN if you were not able to get any productive results before Congress. Do you have any indication that other governments may indeed have had some contact with extraterrestrials and kept that?
We know they have.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Good point. It is not a U.S. phenomenon. It is a global phenomenon. However, the U.S., number one, is the last remaining superpower. Number two has been in the catbird seat on this subject for a very long time. Number three, I need to clarify, I don't believe the U.S. or any other government in the sense of the normal chain of command and elected officials have been particularly involved in this. I mean, this is the point I make to UFO researchers, and they say, oh my God, the Air Force is hiding stuff from them. I got news for them. 99% of the people associated with the Air Force don't know anything about this subject in terms of any of these projects. And we'll never know anything about them. You know, it's like a guy I talked to with a big electronics corporation that does a lot of top secret work. He pointed out to me that the tank that one would go in to learn about this ain't on Capitol Hill, and it's not even in Washington. And so you have to be very careful about these sort of sweeping generalizations about the, quote, government. Now, I have met with officials in the United Kingdom and in other governments, and I know that, yes, there have been super-secret projects in other countries, but they have not had, they've had the same kind of dysfunction in terms of lack of oversight and lack of knowledge. For example, I met personally with the former head of the Ministry of Defense in Great Britain, who was involved in that capacity for years. He was head of the NATO committee, the military committee for NATO, I'm sorry. And he told me very directly that he had never had this subject cross his radar screen, even though he was head of MI5 and MI6 and the MOD. And he only found out about it accidentally after he left that position and then started looking into it and found out that it was very real. So, I mean, people have to be a little more sophisticated in how they regard this. But I would say that the U.S. is a prime place to have this happen. It is the most media-rich country in the world in terms of the media covering an event like this. It certainly is the last remaining superpower, and many, many of the witnesses we have, not all of them, are from the United States, and it would be safest and best for them to be able to provide this testimony through Congress. So that's our rationale at going through Congress. But certainly as backup positions, as I said earlier, or as, I should say, not backup, but as the parallel tracks, we have been investigating the cooperation of other nations as well as the United Nations on this issue.
All right. If all else failed, Congress, the UN, I take it then the change venue you would seek would be directly to the media.
Yes. And one of the things I would love to see happen is somebody who could understand the implications of this be willing to work with us in partnership in doing a world expose and documentary on this subject, which could be aired, number one. Putting out, similarly, a book of testimony and evidence on the subject, and that's number two. And then number three, having various people help us in networking with other think tanks and other institutes, which could help make this thing come out in the event that the governments become irrelevant. And I hate to use it that word that way, but your guy who said, you know, our elected officials are this and that, and I'm actually a cautious optimist about our elected officials. I think that if given the chance, some of them will want to do the right thing, but maybe not enough to make a difference, in which case, if the government choose not to get involved with this because it's too hot a potato to handle, then I think we need to start looking at networking with other institutions and entities. And we have been doing that for about 3 years, but we want to do more of that. And that's why I'm discussing this on your show publicly.
All right, good. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Stephen Greer. Hello.
Hello, Eric.
Hi, where are you?
In Redding.
Redding,
California.
All right, go ahead.
Well, I can give you the names of six people right now who know for a fact that we have interstellar capability. Two government officials, two civilians, and two military.
Well, please give me a call and share those with me directly.
Sure, I have your number. As far as the media coverage is concerned, if the American media won't even cover the almost daily UFO sightings that occur in Mexico City, how would you expect that they would be willing to cover this?
Ah, good point.
That is a very good point. And the media, as a member of our team who was once the Time Bureau chief for Time Magazine, has said, has really fallen asleep at the wheel. The Fourth Estate is almost totally dysfunctional at this point. But what I would say to people, however, is that the media need to have something to focus on. And this is why either congressional hearings or a UN conference or something like that. You can't just have another UFO conference in the Holiday Inn in Poughkeepsie and expect the world media to take that seriously, where you sell tickets for $10 a pop.
Well,
it's got to be done in a way that is world-class, that has extraordinary evidence and extraordinary whistleblowers and witnesses stepping forward. I think if you meet those criteria and you have any media savvy at all, the media will cover it. But it's got to be something where, you know, Carl Sagan said something which many people have gotten furious about, and I agree with him. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Indeed.
And so the onus is on us in the civilian sector to collect the extraordinary evidence, both in the way of witness testimony and in the form of videotape, photographic evidence. And that's what I was going to say before the break. Anyone out there who has evidence, not just witnesses, but other types of evidence which they think would be helpful in convincing these members of Congress or the public that this subject is real, please contact us, because what we want to do is put this in our briefing document and in our evidential pool.
Doctor, how much physical evidence do you now have?
The people I'm working with possess a substantial number of cases where there is physical evidence, and they are unambiguous. This is a hot potato. I can't go into a lot of detail. But let me just say, if there's a congressional hearing or a scientific inquiry at the National Academy of Sciences, we've got a freight train full of evidence, I think, that can be driven through any door that cracks open. And it will be definitive. But the problem is that, again, where do you present that? You present that at the next UFO conference? I don't think so.
I don't either.
Cover it. And that's the other problem with the subject. You've got to think strategically. Where do you position something this big so it gets taken seriously?
All right. Even with all deference, Doctor, given to Larry King, Larry King has done programs in which he sat out in the middle of the desert near Area 51.
I was on that program. Yeah.
Exactly. But the world did not suddenly sit up and take notice after that program, so I'm not sure Larry King is the right
venue. That program was not designed to gather together the definitive evidence and have it presented, because at that time we weren't ready to do that, and I don't think it would have been appropriate to do it. We were still exploring avenues and are still exploring avenues with the government and elsewhere. But I think that the time for that is coming very quickly. I would like to see this completed during 1997 or 98 at the latest, and I think it can be. Again, it's a matter of people pulling together and doing this. There's another way of approaching this, and this is another point I'd like to make quickly, is that you can also take this to the people by saying, and the other part of what CSETI is doing, to attempt to interact with these spacecraft directly.
Mm-hmm.
And on a number of occasions, we've had near landing situations where these things have been 10 feet above the ground or hovering 300 or 400 feet above us. And I think that this is something people can begin to do, because these objects are being seen all over the world all the time. And we're going to have a training for people interested in this in the high desert of Colorado in June, from June 12th until the 17th of this year, where we're going to train people in these research protocols. So anyone who might be interested in that also should contact us or look at our website, and they'll see if there's a notice on there about this training. And I will be there personally there to train people in doing this. And we do this through a number of modalities that include the uses of high-powered lights, electromagnetic signals, remote viewing and remote vectoring, and some other high strangeness techniques that are controversial but which appear to be effective. And what I'm saying to folks is that that's another grassroots. People listening to this show say, gee, you know, what can I do? I don't know a witness. I tell them, look, if you live in anywhere on this planet, you can learn to go out and do real-time observation and take it one step further. Try to establish some kind of contact or dialogue with these objects and see what happens. Now, you know, it's not for the faint of heart, because you don't know what's going to happen. It might be something you're not quite ready for. But, I mean, if you're someone who is somewhat adventuresome and willing to go out and investigate this, we have developed a series of protocols which I think will facilitate people being able to do that effectively out in the field and actually establish some type of preliminary contact with these objects. And if this is done by enough people all over the world, I think the day will come when a definitive and unambiguous event will take place that will be filmed and will be witnessed by a dozen or several dozen people, and it simply won't be able to keep the genie in the bottle any longer.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Stephen Greer. Hi.
Hi. This is Jack in Charleston, South Carolina.
Hello, Jack.
Hi. I have a comment and a couple quick questions. First, during the first hour, Dr. Greer's comments kind of seemed to me to have the intensity of John Lowengard when he was speaking about people's right to know on dark skies.
Yes.
And my question, have you had any contact with Representative Stephen Schiff from New Mexico?
Good question.
And what? Is there any truth to the stories about Majestic 12? And also, are you going to involve Arch Parts?
All right.
I should say that there are members of our team, close members of our team, who do know Representative Schiff. And we have, there are about 60 members of Congress who are personal friends of various people in the CSETI network. And we have an extensive network of people. And those, we've been doing these backdoor briefings and meetings with quite a few of these. I mean, I have personally met with senators and congressmen from Democratic and Republican aisles in the last year. And I do believe, of course, Representative Schiff is one of the people we'll be inviting to this briefing in Washington. As far as, you know, does Majestic 12 exist? Yes, it does. I don't know that it's called that right now. The last known acronym for this entity that I knew was PI-40. I don't know what it stands for, but the letters P and I and then the number 40. But it really doesn't matter what it's called. The fact of the matter, we know it exists, and we've developed some pretty good contacts into it. It's not what people think it is, though. I can tell you that most of it is in the private sector. If you really want to know where the balance of power is on this issue in terms of policymaking and what have you, it's not even in the government. It's in the private sector.
All right. I know that it's getting very late back east.
Yes.
And,
I'm getting tired. I'm going to have to sign off here fairly
exactly.
Soon.
And we're coming to the end of the hour. So give them your contact information one more time, Doctor, please.
Yes. Our website is www.csetti.org. And our phone number is area code 704-274-5671. And if they want to write us a snail mail, it's P.O. Box 15401, Asheville, A-S-H-E-V-I-L-L-E, North Carolina, 28813. And, again, people calling, please restrict your calls to those who have evidence or government witnesses that they would like to network into this project, because we simply, you know, are trying to focus on that right now. If people are interested in attending the training in Colorado in June, information on that is available on the website, or they can write us and we'll send them information about it.
Okay. Doctor, I would hope that somewhere down the line you would give me a call and let me know how you do, how the response goes. Would you do that?
Well, maybe we can get back together after this meeting this spring, and we'll talk about where we are then.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Dr. Greer, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Stephen Greer from CSETI. And there you have it. A lot set up to occur this spring, isn't there? All right, everybody. When we come back, and we will, open lines. Anything can and will happen. Stay right where you are.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997. Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired February 21st, 1997.
All right, listen to me, everybody, and listen very closely. We are going on the definitive Alaska cruise, and I mean the definitive Alaska cruise. There's lots of Alaskan cruises out there that are totally lightweight. We're going on the real one. It'll be the third week in August. It begins in Vancouver, British Columbia. There, we board a spectacular brand new ship of the Princess Line. And I mean brand new, just commissioned. and will sail through the inside passage to Ketchikan, Juneau, historic Skagway, right up to the face of the towering ice fields in Glacier Bay National Park, and in the majestic College Fjord. The cruise itself is great. But take it from me, because I know Alaska.
Now we take you back to the night of February 21st, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, open lines coming up. I've got quite a bit of information that I'm going to sprinkle around. Here's one, for example. This comes from Gary in Las Vegas, listening to KXNT 840. Art, did you see the story on Channel 8? That's our CBS affiliate in Las Vegas at 6. George Knapp did a story about the strange humming noise in Pahrump. People in Pahrump can't find the source of the hum. Could it be from your radio station? No, it's not on the air yet. Or could it be something going on in Dreamland? Anyway, in case you hadn't seen it, I thought you'd like to know. Well, no, I didn't see it. Yes, I certainly do know about the Pahrump hum. As I've said on this program before, I've got a very good friend who lives across town, works at the test site, and he lives over on the other side of town, I guess I better not say, but the other side of town, and he built a porch. And in doing so, he sunk some 2x4s, or bigger, into the ground, and when he did, he got so much hum that he couldn't sleep at night. This is no joke. He ended up removing that porch because he could not sleep at night. So there you've got it. A little bit of an update on a sort of a weird thing going on out here where I am. Now, I got a fax tonight that you've got to hear. This is incredible. Maybe somebody out there can help out with this. Dear Art, I'm writing to you to see if I can get some help from you or your vast listening audience. I live in rural eastern Washington near the Manistash Ridge. That's M-A-N-A-S-T-A-S-H, Manistash Ridge. On our property, there is a hole. Like the previous owners and the owners before them, we have been throwing our trash into the hole. Apparently, the hole has been there as long as anybody can remember. At first, I thought it was an ancient well. Anyway, the hole is 9 feet, 9 inches in diameter. There is a stone retaining wall around it, and we've put a steel door on top to keep anybody from falling into it. As I said earlier, people have been throwing their trash into the well, that's in quotes, for decades. Furniture, household trash, dead cows, building debris, you name it. The thing is that I noticed that the hole never filled up. So I got curious, actually obsessed. I began trying to measure the depth of the hole. So I emptied 3 fishing reels of about 1,500 yards of monofilament, trying to determine the depth. Soon, I was buying fishing line in bulk. So far, I've sunk about 80,000 feet of line into the hole without reaching bottom. My wife works, that's 80,000 feet, folks. My wife works at a local university with a geology department. We hope to get some professional scholarly help in determining the depth of the hole. As far as I can tell, there's nothing else particularly strange about the hole except for 2 other things. One, dogs refuse to get within about 100 feet of it. Birds will not sit on the retaining wall or metal door. Another strange thing is there's no echo when you yell into it. None. Indeed, I've never heard anything hit bottom when tossed in. We once tossed in an old refrigerator and never heard it hit bottom. No crash, no splash, no crunch. I hope your listeners can help with possible explanations. I'm wondering if this, based on my measurements so far, is the deepest hole on Earth. Signed, Mel, and I've got his last name here. Thank you, Art Bell, and listeners. And I thought you would enjoy hearing about that. I sure did. Perusing the mainstream news a little bit, Kenneth Starr now says he's going to stay and finish. There were a bunch of people out there saying that Kenneth Starr had conducted two mock trials of the Clintons. That's now said to have been a rubbish story. Prosecutors are vowing to seek the death penalty in the case of Lawrence Singleton, now accused of killing a prostitute. And I guess the best you can say there is better late than never. Should have done that first time around. There should have never been a case of Lawrence Singleton involved in the justice system after the first time. He should have been gone forever, and you and I both know it. Airline accidents rose last year. National Transportation Safety Board saying that passenger deaths and major accidents rose last year. 380 people dead. But, you know, that's from crashes, and they didn't say how many died from just getting sick on airplanes. I'm telling you, I'm going to do it. I'm going to find the right person. I'm going to do a program on that. I'm so angry about that, I could scream. If I was any better, I would scream. Here's a fact. Lately, it seems, I get sick a few days after beginning a trip. Or a few days after returning, Art. If I get sick as a result of the outbound portion, the trip is seriously disrupted. In either case, I lose several days' productivity. The prevalence of non-refundable tickets has undoubtedly increased the number of infectious sick people on airliners. Considering how many people get sick from diseases they contract in poorly ventilated airliner cabins, I would suspect many more are killed by poor ventilation than are killed in airline crashes. Right on the money, my friend. Right on the money. You see, in the days when they used to allow smoking on aircraft, remember those days long ago? They had to bring in a lot of outside air in order to take care of the smoke problem. Now, once they stopped the smoking, they began more recirculating, and the germs go round and round. And that's how I got sick. No question about it. You could count back the day I began to get sick from, it was just the right germination period from when I'd been on the airliner coming back from Mexico. Our friends in Chicago are underwater nearly. The weather across the U.S. is utterly, absolutely bizarre. Buffalo, New York, yesterday, 70 degrees. Chicago, with a couple of inches of rain, boom like that. The South, with ugly, violent weather. Something's changing. Former heavyweight boxing champ Riddick Bowe, in and out of the U.S. Marine Corps, measured in days, hours, really. And I think the Marine Corps is not necessarily for millionaires who are used to being pampered and having whatever they want. I'm sure he got down to Paris Island and found out you don't get whatever you want when you're in basic training in the Marine Corps, and so he didn't last very long. That was generally predictable, wasn't it? Well, I've got a lot more because it has been adding up. There has been another response from the person who calls himself Priest. We're going to get that up on the webpage and keep you informed as it comes along. So, open lines, Friday night, Saturday morning. Anything you cats want to talk about is fair game. I do, I'm trying to be fair now to Major Ed Dames. I have got a definitive result on the Philip Taylor Kramer case. And I'm really trying to get hold of Kathy Kramer. So, Kathy, if you're out there, call me. Somehow I lost Kathy's number. And I've got to talk to Kathy before I make public what Ed Dames has reported. At any rate, he will be going on the air with us March 6th, and we'll get it resolved between now and then, hopefully long before. All right, to the lines, west of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Mr. Bill. How are you?
Well, sick.
Oh, this is not Mr. Bill?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. I want to ask you something.
All right.
Your previous guest. I'm a first-time caller.
Yes, sure.
I don't know if you've ever heard this story that has been on all the news last month, and they did a sighting show on it about these children that had, I think it was England, that they had seen this UFO. There was over 28 little kids, elementary, and they went out and interviewed them. I saw them. I've seen it twice on TV.
Yeah, I heard something about that.
And the thing I want to comment and ask you, Mr. Bell, is every one of these children was taken in separately and told. They told the same story that the alien beings, they described them, they all saw them. The alien beings told every child that unless we stopped what we were doing on this planet, we were going to destroy it, and they wanted the message to be given to the children. I don't know who the alien beings expected the children to do anything about it, but many, many researchers and scientists and government people went down and interviewed these kids, and then
mm-hmm.
that's the last you've heard of it.
Right.
But it was on every show. And the other thing you said with your guest that came across, if people will just put their common thinking helmets on and wonder, it was over how many years ago when they landed on the moon, Mr. Bell, our astronauts?
Long time ago.
Oh, give me an approximate time.
30 years.
That's what I was going to guess. Okay, and common sense just has made me wonder, like many people, it just totally stopped. They have regressed rather than progressed.
Well, I've always wondered about that myself. Thank you. It just stopped. And that is something to wonder about. And there are a lot of arguments that can be made that suggest that, well, yes, we went, and we went several times. We didn't find anything more than rocks. Now, that is certainly one scenario worthy of serious consideration. That, well, we didn't find anything. So, naturally, we stopped. We could no longer justify the use of that kind of money without getting significant return of some sort for going to the moon or on to Mars or whatever. Or you can imagine, you can imagine there were other reasons that we stopped. I think you can give equal weight to both scenarios. Stephen Greer, Dr. Greer, a very, very articulate guest on this subject, and I think there's going to be some... This is going to be a very interesting spring, this coming spring, isn't it? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Art, this is Martin in Oceanside, and I was wondering if you've ever talked with Dr. Jack Kasher, who reviewed the STS-48 footage.
Well, I've talked to a lot of people about STS-48, but not that doctor. What does he say?
They've had him on sightings and a couple other programs, and apparently, from what I can get from the report, it was NASA itself who got him. He was a physics professor at Nevada University, I believe, or University of Nevada, and he tried to prove it to be ice crystals, but there was no way he could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And some NASA officials at press conference even said that we are confident that he would prove it to be ice crystals. But he's talked quite a bit about it. And
I've got a report for you that you might find interesting.
What is it?
The following. Hey, Art, I don't know if you've already heard it, but one of the shuttle astronauts said... They got a great view of Hale-Bopp this morning. This was prior to landing. And it looked like it had two tails. If you check out this page and then listen to the audio, you'll probably hear it for yourself. I caught a NASA news brief at 9:30 yesterday morning. Maybe they'll have it on every half hour. So apparently, without the atmosphere to look through, the astronauts got a good look at the comet, and it looked like it had two tails, and that was apparently radio traffic that passed between the shuttle and ground. Interesting, eh?
What time can we see it now on the, let's see, I'm at the west coast, so if I took binoculars out?
About an hour prior to sunrise in the eastern sky.
Okay, good.
And I guess she's about 20 degrees above the horizon now, almost far enough for me to see. I've got a mountain range to the east, and I'm waiting, waiting for it to either get high enough or shift to the western horizon. So I've been desperately trying to see Hale-Bopp without any luck yet. I know a lot of you have seen it, though.
And I'm glad you're alive.
Oh, me too. Thank you. Yeah, a lot of rumors going around that I was dead. Still getting calls from affiliates saying, is Art alive? We've heard he's dead. You should see the messages going around on the Internet. Sorry to disappoint those who would be preparing to have a party. No, I'm not dead. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. I was calling about that hole that you mentioned.
Yeah,
what
isn't
that...
I beg pardon?
The hole you talked about?
Yes.
What city was that from?
Well, let me see here. I live, he says, in rural eastern Washington near the Manastash Ridge. M-A-N-A-S-T-A-S-H.
And about how deep is it?
Well, so far he's got 80,000 feet of monofilament hanging down without having hit bottom.
Right. I don't know if you recall me during your predictions, but I did an off-the-cuff prediction that said off the record, I mean, because I gave you one, and then I said there's going to be a hole discovered.
You did?
I did. I have it on tape. That's why I wanted you to repeat all this information.
You have it on tape?
I sure do.
You have the tape there with you?
Yes, I do.
All right. I'll tell you what. I've got a break coming up.
Okay.
Cue up your tape.
Okay.
I'm putting you on hold.
Thank you.
All right?
Sure.
I've got to hear. I don't offhand remember it, but there's nothing like Memorex, huh? So we'll see if he really made that prediction coming up next. If so, right on target. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997.
All right. Well, I think I've ripped my lip apart. I've got a caller sitting on hold. Let's caller, are you there?
I sure am.
Go ahead. Now, you've got a tape, right?
Right.
You predicted that a hole would be found in the earth.
Yes. So what you're going to hear on tape is dovetailing from my first prediction from the year before.
Yeah, that's fine.
And then I made another prediction, but that's not on here. Then I said, off the record, I wanted to give you that other one about the hole.
All right.
Okay, here we go.
From last year was a swarm of air troubles. Yeah. Oh. Ding, 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 ding. You're absolutely right, sir. You certainly hit that one on the head.
Well, it was a toss-up, so that one I think you could record, but my other thing was I also see like a hole in the earth somewhere, like an undiscovered cave or something like that.
Really?
It's just off the record.
A portal, possibly, to the world below.
But hey, wow. By the way, did you hear about the Indonesian?
There you go.
Wow! Ding, 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 ding! Paul,
I recorded
very
that one.
Good, very good, sir.
Thank you.
I really appreciate that. Well, all right, there it is.
And oh, yeah, we don't record that officially, I want to.
I have got to interview this guy. What do you think about this? I mean, this does sound pretty weird, huh?
Well, sure.
I think I ripped part of my lip off. Oh, man. All right, sir, thank you very much.
Good talking to you.
Right, take care. I did. In my panic, I ripped part of my lip off. That's really pathetic. Dear Art, concerning the facts you received regarding the bottomless hole, if this is a true story, then Mel is an idiot. That's not fair. I can't imagine thinking it was appropriate to throw things like a refrigerator down holes that they thought led to their groundwater supply. If the hole really is 80,000 feet deep, then I would imagine there is a university nearby that would love to study it. True. Troy in Sacramento. God, a piece of my lip is gone. I've got this all over my hands now. This really, really sucks. This is the worst super glue incident that I've ever had, and I've had many in my lifetime. See, I was in a hurry because we're in the break. Unbelievable. Now I'll get to sit here and pick this off for the rest of the program. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. Let me kill the radio here real quick.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry about your lip incident there.
Well, you know what happened? It flowed all over my fingers, and I thought that was, you know, it almost dries instantly, but it wasn't dry, and so I put it up to start to pick it off, you know the way you do?
Uh-huh.
And instead, it flowed right over my lip. And then I closed my lip, and the rest you can imagine.
Neat trick for talk show host.
Yeah, really.
This is Smoker Dave in Mesa.
Yeah.
And hello to everybody at work. I'm kind of amazed that you can't see hail pop above the mountain range yet.
I've got a 5,500-foot mountain between Pahrump and Las Vegas directly east of me.
Because I've been even able to point it out to my boss at work from where I work at like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. We can see it even in city lights here.
Well, I envy you.
And I'm going out in about a couple hours here with my 4.5-inch Meade telescope.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been getting better with that?
Well, not yet.
Have you found Polaris with it yet?
I found the moon. Give me
you
a break. That's all I found is the moon.
So the first time I took it out, I got Polaris, and then I got Mars, and tonight will be the second night I'm taking it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go out and try to get hail-bop on it here in a couple hours.
Well, if it doesn't get high enough, as I say, I've got this big mountain range, and what do you estimate hail-bop to be above the horizon now, about 20 degrees at
best?
Yeah,
it's about 20 degrees, and actually you can still see it. I mean, here with the city lights, we can only see the very brightest stars, and you just look for a bright star that looks fuzzy.
All right. Yes, I've got you. Thank you very much. And then I would assume once you get a telescope on it that you can see a very definitive tale. I'm jealous. As I say, I've got this large mountain range that rises directly to the east of me. And eventually, of course, it's going to move to the west. Then I'll have it made. But I'm jealous. Jealous. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, this is Mike from Dubuque.
Hello, Mike.
Last time I called you was a week ago today when you were talking to JC.
Mm-hmm.
That was
yes.
fun, wasn't it?
Very different, yes. Typical of what we do on this show, different.
I wanted to ask you if you could do me a favor.
What do you have in mind?
I caught part of a show quite a while ago that you did on Bigfoot, and you had a Bigfoot yell.
Oh, yeah, I've got it.
Can you play that for me?
Well, it's pretty scary stuff.
Yes.
Why?
Well, I have a friend that goes to school in the University of Wisconsin in Madison.
Yeah.
And he is, I'm not exactly sure what he does, but, his specialty, he's doing his master's thesis in animal, I guess you call it languages.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out exactly how much animals have the ability to communicate.
All right. Here is the first one. This is only so-so. It's good, but not great. You know, that sounds to me more like the victim of a proctologist, you know?
Yeah, that wasn't the one that I heard.
That's right. The other one that I have is a very, very serious Yeti yell. And I have had experts on the air.
Okay.
Experts on the Yeti who have heard this and say, yes, oh, yes, that is genuine.
Okay.
You know, a number of people have studied. So here comes the genuine Yeti yell, and nobody would ever want to hear this in the dead, dark night in the middle of a forest. Here it is. What does that say to you?
Well, I was wondering, I'm recording this right now.
Well, what does that say to you? When you hear that, what does that say to you?
Don't come any closer and go as far away as possible.
At least that, huh?
But he was, and hopefully when I when this tape comes out, it'll be good enough. But, you know, recording off the radio doesn't give you a very good copy.
That's true.
Even on the
if you have a computer, I think they've got a sound clip of that up on the website.
Okay.
All right.
That would probably be all I need, because it can be he needed to be digital, so he can break it down.
I see.
So he can, you know, do all whatever they do to animal cries.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to your report. Get back to us.
I will.
All right. Take care, my friend. Actually, a little piece of my lip in the ashtray here. God, it hurts. I've got this stuff all over me now. Stinking superglue. You know, it doesn't have to be like water. I've had this other superglue. It's a little bit better. It's superglue gel or something. But it's still bad. And it still grows on you. But this stuff, this is like water. I mean, this just flowed over me like turning on a spigot. Now I've got to wait for my lip to heal. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Art. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Milt from Como Country up here in Seattle.
Yes, sir.
About 3 or 4 weeks ago, you had a fellow on from back east someplace that had a machine that cleansed the blood. And he was talking about curing cancer.
Oh, that was Wayne Green.
Wayne Green.
Yeah.
And is there some way that I can get the... I didn't have a chance to write down his address or phone number.
Well, I don't have it offhand, but what I would recommend is getting a copy of the program.
Do I need to know what day he was on?
No, just the last Wayne Green program we did.
Yeah, I have a very dear friend that has lupus, and that was one of the things he said he'd had some success with. So we're kind of interested in seeing what he has to offer there.
Been tempted to try it myself lately.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I guess you got from the plane trip, huh? That's
angry. I'm so angry about that.
Yeah, well, the same thing happens to me every time I go on a trip. I get sick.
What a price to pay for a vacation, you know?
Really, really.
Few days of vacation and an equal number of days flat on my back, sick as a dog.
Yeah, there's a lot of tough bugs going around.
And now on top of everything else, I mean, it's when it rains, it pours. I've ripped my lip.
Yeah, I heard you super glued it, huh?
I did, yeah, during the break.
Well, that stuff dries awful quick. I've glued my fingers together before.
I appreciate the call, sir. It was a natural reaction. I just put my, you know, you want to get it when it's just dried, you know, before it really sinks in, right? And I had a couple of fingers here about glued together, so I put it up to my mouth to try and pull it off in moss. And that's when it flowed across my lip. Bad move for a talk show host. I'm going to be interviewing somebody next week, I believe, named Emily Lau. Emily is an elected Hong Kong representative, and she's going to talk to us, I believe, Monday. Now, it's tentative, all right, because we're talking about a connection to the other side of the world. Something we can do. And she's really sticking her neck out because I think Emily's liable to end up in jail. And I've talked to my source about this very carefully. Thoroughly. But she wants to go on the air. She wants to talk about this. She is an elected representative of what is left of the Hong Kong government now prior to the takeover in July. So we are going to talk to Emily. I think at great risk to her physical self. But it's her choice. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Where are you?
I'm in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Canada.
Yes, sir.
It's been nearly 2 years now since you last had Gordon Michael Scallion on, and we're getting close to the time where these major earth changes are supposed to be taking place. Do you plan to have him on?
I've got a message in to Gordon Michael Scallion. I've not heard back from him. I know that he has been flat out of touch with the media. So when I hear from him, if I can get him on the air, you know I will.
Okay, one more question, quick question.
Sure.
I'm thinking of investing in a satellite dish network.
Yep.
And I heard you once say that you may be going on there where we can
We may, yes.
Get your entire program. Is that still in the works?
Still in the works, yes. The dish network, I love dish, by the way. I've got it here. And I'm in love with it. And yes, the deal is still in the works. No, it is not yet complete. When it is, again, I'll let you know immediately. But very much in the works.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, sir, take care. I guess they can buy it up there in Canada, huh? You should see how much of myself I have glued. That was really dumb. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I feel so bad about your poor lip.
Oh, man. What
I
a
know,
way to go, you know?
I think I have a solution for you. Baby oil.
Baby oil?
Yeah. Yeah. If you put it on the super glue that's dried, it should help to take it off.
Well, it's a little late for my lip.
I'm sorry.
In other words, there's actually a portion of my lip. Actually, well, I can see it here in my ashtray. Yeah.
That's really gross.
It is gross, isn't it?
Anyway,
it was an emergency. I mean, you're on a break. You come back, and you're sitting here mumbling because part of your lip is glued together.
I know.
You've got two choices.
Mercury must be retrograde or something.
Oh.
Anyway, good luck to you.
It's a full moon, too, isn't it?
Glad you're feeling better.
Well, that's, yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
See you later. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Cynthia from San Diego.
Hello, Cynthia.
I have been trying and trying and trying to get a hold of you for so long.
Well, here you are.
Yes, I am. I have a few things I've been wanting to tell you about.
Okay.
First thing is, I got to visit CBC a few weeks ago.
You did?
Yes. I was up in Medford, Oregon with my family on some family business.
I've heard they've got a sign out there.
Yep. I took a picture and everything.
You did? Well, I've never been up there. Can you imagine that?
I have relatives that live up there.
It says something about Home of the Art Bell program,
yes,
show or
something?
Yes,
it's a big, huge sign, and it's on the middle of a street. It's in not a very big place.
Right.
And there it is, you know, and it's in there. They have the offices in three little homes, like craftsman-style houses.
Right.
And they have five cats on the premises.
Yeah, that's right. They're cat people up there.
Yes.
And they've been slowly buying out the block, you know, as they expand.
Yes.
I think they'll own the whole block soon.
Yes. The other thing is, did you receive a package in the mail from, with a CD in it today, maybe yesterday, from a band called Savior Machine?
No, but we're going to go back up to the post office in the morning, so I imagine it's waiting up there.
Yes. Well, Ed and I, we sent it to you on behalf of a friend of ours.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's basically, we call it the soundtrack to the end of the world.
Soundtrack to the end of the world?
Yes, it's kind of like music for the quickening.
Wow.
Yes, we hope you'll find it very interesting.
All right. Maybe I'll play some. You never know.
Yes.
I'll look for it tomorrow.
It's very well done.
Thank you, dear.
Can I say one more thing?
One more thing.
Okay, we saw Mars Attacks not too long ago.
And
did anybody ever tell you that you're parodied in it?
No.
You are.
Where?
I'm serious.
Where?
There's a character in there. He's kind of a wheel-and-dealing Vegas guy.
Oh,
and I was, you know, he's played by Jack Nicholson, who also plays the president in the movie.
Yeah.
And I was looking at him, and he has your mustache. And then I was, like, paying attention to it a lot more as the movie went on. And later on, they had him wearing this shirt that was pretty wild, and it had like UFOs and planets and stuff all over it.
Yep.
And and then at the very, very end, I was looking at the credits, and I noticed that they kept calling him Art throughout the entire movie. That he was, until he, and then at the very end, the credits said his name was Art Land.
Really?
So Vegas is Art Land. Isn't that great?
Humorous, yes, I've heard a very great deal about that movie. All right.
Now you really have to see it.
All right, thank you. Yes, you're right, I really have to see it. Look, we're going to Alaska. It's filling fast. If you want to come to Alaska with us, and we're going on the definitive real Alaskan cruise, really going into the interior of Alaska. You want to see the real Alaska, you come along on this one, folks.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997.
If the guy has credentials and he did work for NSA and this and that, it warrants further study.
Well, he did work for the government remote viewing program. He did that.
No, I understand, but I'm saying I as a citizen, you know, I listen to you. I don't know what if that's true or not, but I believe it to be true. You know what I'm saying? I don't doubt it. But
so obviously, I mean, they're not going to send any sort of enforcement folks over there based on what you've said, right?
No, but I was going to contact the people at Shea itself. But,
well, look, why not just do as I said and go to Curtis, and he and his gang of green hats or whatever they are will go over there and...
Well, I think he would have a more hostile view than the detective that answered the phone. But anyhow, it's nice to speak with you. I work midnights, and you really make my night go by. So I thank you much for taking the call, and I'm shocked that I'm speaking to you, really. It's a pleasure.
Well, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Okay.
New York City, WABC. I've got those jingles, you know. That was sort of a lifelong dream of mine, to get WABC's old jingle package. And I grew up with that. I grew up with that. Cousin Brucey, WABC, boy, I grew up with that. And no matter where I moved around the northeast part of the country, WABC was always there, because they've got a signal that's everywhere in the Northeast and beyond. All right, this is Coast to Coast AM, doing not much of anything, and we'll be right back to do some more of it.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 7th, 1999.
Somewhere where she's never been before. Worn out phrases and longing gazes won't get you where you want to go.
No!
Words of love, soft and tender, won't win her. You ought to know by now.
You ought to know by now.
You ought to know by now.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997.
How long does it take for a piece of a lip to grow back? People are writing me saying, put acetone on it, put acetone on it. It's an open wound. Putting acetone on it now. Besides, what was there is gone. Along with part of my lip, I told you, it's in the ashtray. Sitting right there looking, as that lady said, quite gross. When it rains, it pours.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
I argue with people about disclosure time and time again. I've told them governments are not going to come out willingly to tell us it's going to happen by a mistake, it's going to happen by a whistleblower, but it's not going to be an organized thing. Governments won't do that, and the reason why they won't do it is because they do not want us to know. They think that they'll lose control of us if we know. If you actually truly believe that we were being visited by extraterrestrials and you had categorical proof that it was happening, do you think you would listen to some of the bull that government throws out all the time? Absolutely not. You'd look toward the heavens, you'd say there's got to be a better way, and you would start doing your own thing. And you would forget all about government control and everything else. So the bottom line is, government will never, ever disclose the true facts of UFOs.
Now we take you back to the night of February 21st, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Well, I believe as a talk show host, I now have probably had it all happen to me. This is the perhaps one of the largest atrocities that I've ever committed upon myself yet. Hey, Art, if, like the man in Eastern Washington, I had a deep hole in my backyard, I'm afraid curiosity would get the better of me, and here's what I'd do. After building a platform to work from, I'd mount a good telescope like the one you have. Thank you. Then, with a good quality mirror, I would reflect sunlight down the hole to see exactly what was there using the telescope. Well, that's not a bad idea, but I mean, he's got 80,000 feet of monofilament down there so far. And I'm not sure reflected light would do the job. Maybe a laser. I don't know. Hey, Art, do you think JC was behind this lip job? No, it was me. It's my own stupidity. It wasn't JC. That's Nathan in Bristol, Tennessee. I'm sure he might have wished it on me. Well, I'm going to be picking this off for the rest of the weekend. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, let me turn that off.
Yep, turn that off.
Art, yes. Four things. First, when you played that Yeti out,
yes,
my 3 cats just went nuts.
Oh, I know. They don't like it.
Number two, JC, keep up the good work. These guys, I think they're so comical. I receive so much entertainment from them. I grew up with Jim and Tammy Baker.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. It's just hilarious.
I used to watch Jim and Tammy.
Makes two of us.
Really?
Well, for that matter, my family, too. It was just comical.
Yeah, it was.
But then again,
Tammy,
I'm also a Calvinist.
Tammy was a lot of fun, too. What's a Calvinist?
John Calvin?
Yeah.
In the Great Reformation, back with Martin Luther.
Oh, yes.
I was reared in that type of church.
Uh-huh.
Number three, with your guest, I, too, have seen things up in the sky that I have no knowledge of what they are, but, yeah, somewhat mysterious. What bothers me is he would not name those people that are willing to go public.
Well, he is willing to do that at the appropriate time.
But now,
to do that ahead of time would put them in danger. And he...
You think
he
so? Why?
Yeah, because he wants them all to come out at once.
Hmm.
He's going to do that this spring. Weren't you listening?
Oh, yeah, I was listening. That's what bothers me. I mean, there's so many outlets. Well, I guess it's the onslaught that I find troublesome. So many people at one time.
Well, I think, though, he's right. Thank you for the call. Safety in numbers. I think Dr. Greer is exactly right. Safety in numbers. I would not expect him to name people willy-nilly tonight in the interview. I think that would be very irresponsible. If you listen carefully to what his objective was, it is to get a lot of people of great character who are vetted, who can go before congressional sources under sworn conditions and give testimony and break this whole thing open. No, I think he's on exactly the right track. Exactly the right track. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
Wait, let me turn my radio
off. Yeah, oh yeah, turn it off and get good and close to the phone. Yell at us because you're not too loud.
Okay, sir. Yeah, I'm sorry about your lip.
Yeah.
Were you,
Thank you.
Thinking about that Sealed with a Kiss record?
Sealed with a Kiss.
Is that
nobody would kiss me right now. Lips do grow back, right?
Excuse me?
I said lips grow back, right?
Yes, hopefully. Right.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I really enjoy your program. I just got the Beijing radio.
Oh, you got the Beijing?
Yeah, fantastic.
Tell everybody, is it or is it not absolutely amazing?
It is great. I'll tell you. I've got a couple of other shortwave radios in that price range.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't hold a candle to this art.
I know. It is the most amazing radio.
And I also have, of course, the crank. It takes about 30 minutes. And also
I have the
solar power pack.
They do sell it. You don't need it, but it's kind of neat. I mean, you can, have you tried it yet? You can put that solar pack under a light bulb.
Yeah, right now I'm charging it up. About an hour from now, I'm still going to listen to your show. And I'll email you as to how it is.
Yeah, but what I was telling everybody is you can actually run that radio directly off no more light than comes from a 100-watt bulb.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. All right, sir, I appreciate the call. Thank you. If you want to get one of the Beijing radios before they're gone, it's 1-800-522-8863. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, Art?
Yes.
When you had Whitney Strieber on, he said that the asteroid crossed the Earth's path about 270,000 miles.
That's right.
Well, in Strange Universe, they had they showed a guy in California took a picture of a asteroid going through the atmosphere, and it was only about 80 miles high.
That's right. It's also on dark skies.
Yeah.
So we've had that's called a bullet graze.
Yeah, that just glanced off the atmosphere.
That's right.
In Isaiah 24:20, it talks about the earth wobbling when one of these things hit. That the earth will wobble like a drunkard.
What would happen if the earth actually began to wobble?
I don't know, but...
Whatever, it wouldn't be good.
That's right.
I'm sure of that. I wonder if we'd all sort of start to jerk around.
I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Well, it wouldn't be good. All right, sir. Thank you very much for the call. Latest on the website. A link to Dr. Greer's C-SETI project up there right now. The second anonymous priest letter on the Hale-Bopp page. That's up on the front, too. I just received it. You read it. See what you think. Then I see Keith has put up there, rumors of Art's demise are greatly exaggerated. You know, I should read that to you. Some really mean-spirited person put up my death notice. I am. I'll get that and read it to you. I don't know who the hell did that, but do any of you out there happen to have it? I've got a copy in the other room somewhere, and I'll find it and read it to you. But, you know, it was like a press release, and they put it up on the Internet. I bet one of you out there has it. If somebody has it, call me. And I'll let you read it. Otherwise, I'll try and find my copy. And so everybody's been calling me and saying, are you dead? And sending me email. That's another one. They've been sending me email. Are you dead? You know how I've been responding? Yes. I died on the 20th. It was very sad. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine.
Turn off thy radio.
Okay.
Click. Click. There you go. Where are you?
Los Angeles.
That's a good place to be. What's on your mind?
Well, art.
Yes.
Couple of things.
Yes.
One, I wondered, with Stephen Greer, what makes him think that anybody will listen when they treated Richard Hoagland the way they did when he had his press conference? The press wouldn't show up and stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's not a reason not to try, though. And he's going to gather together some very heavy-duty people, government and private sector, and they're going to tell what they know.
Okay.
I mean, it's worth a try.
Yeah, it is. The other thing is I faxed you about Ed Dames.
Yes.
Appearing the other day at MUFON.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to that. And he was very evasive in answering questions about ETs and stuff, which I thought was interesting. And he said there was no such branch as MJ-12.
Well, Dr. Greer said, yes, there is, but it's not called MJ-12. And as he points out, what's in a name? MJ-12, magic, whatever it is. It is the idea of what it is, not what it's called. Who cares what it's called? If there is a group that possesses this information, in effect, government within a government, I'm not saying there is, this is what Dr. Greer said, then its name is not particularly important. Its existence certainly is. Speaking of Ed Dames, you should see what I've got here from the Electronic Telegraph. Headline, Japan milk fears as Australian anthrax spreads. Australia's worst anthrax outbreak for a century spread to sheep yesterday as authorities tried to reassure milk and beef customers in Asia that they were not in the middle of a, in quotes, mad cow type of crisis. The deputy prime minister told Asian trading partners there was no threat to human health as a large vaccination program was stepped up to cover 32,000 cattle and sheep in Victoria. So far, more than 130 cattle and at least one sheep have died since the outbreak was reported January 26th. Wow. Milk. Remember what Ed Dames had to say about milk? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art. This is Ed in San Diego.
Hello, Ed.
Your infamous board op at KFMB.
Yes, sir.
You know, they nickname me Bellboy now.
Really?
Yes. So my boss calls me.
Calls you Bellboy?
Uh-huh. Because I'm like your biggest fan down here as far as like station personnel.
Well, that's an honor.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
That's all right.
Anything, I was just hoping that I'm glad you're feeling better.
Oh, my God. You know what I just noticed?
What?
I've got glue all over my nose, too.
Oh, Art, quick. I was talking to your board off the CBC. Acetone, stuff like nail polish remover is really good for debasing that stuff.
Oh, man, it's all over my nose. I didn't even notice that before. I was so worried about my lip. Oh, I really wiped myself out. I'm sorry. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I hope you can. That's what I was calling to let you know about some acetone-based stuff like nail polish remover.
Yeah, right.
That stuff is good for getting off that kind of glue base.
Well, if there's any glue left on my lip, I'm sure as hell not going to splash acetone on it. So,
You said it was. I didn't know if it was still on your hand or not.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's all over.
Yeah.
My
hand.
Yeah.
What a mess. Oh. Well, I hope your cats were keeping you company when you were sick. I know they're good.
You know what? They know when you're sick.
They certainly do.
And they come to you and they try and comfort you in their own little cat way.
They certainly do.
Yep.
They can be wonderful, wonderful companions when you're ill.
Cats are very sensitive that way.
And I hope you'll get your cat page coming up soon on the web, because I'd love to send you some of our family, of our four cats.
We'll probably do that. We'll probably put up a cat page. I think we will. That's a great idea. Thanks for reminding me.
Best to you, sir.
Take care. Bellboy, huh? Oh, man, I've got this all up and down one side of my nose. My nose is already sore, you know, because I've been blowing it so often. when you're down, whoever it is who gets you down loves to kick you, huh? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
How you doing? My name is Lou from Arkansas.
Well, hi, Lou.
I'd like to tell you about a little dream that I had a couple years ago. It was a... Mm-hmm. I believe it's a prophetic dream. It might happen later on down the road, but I was in this, like a restaurant, and I thought I was having the meal of my life. I could just, like, everybody was waiting on me hand and foot. I could do, they'd do anything they wanted.
It's like you were a king.
Yeah, you just say whatever you want. You know, your wish was their
command.
Greatest desire, right?
I got you, yes. Mm-hmm.
And then towards the end of the night, you know, I was in this, line talking to all these people. Some of them were my old friends that I had in high school, you know, hadn't seen for years. And I was just kind of wondering what was going on, you know. And I was kind of like just an observer, you know, and not really had much control of what was going on. And everybody was just having this good old time, you know. And then we were taken to this room, and we were all these lazy boys with these headphones, you know. And we were just, like, listening to this music, kicking back. And I asked these people, what were we doing here for? And they says, this one guy says, you don't know why you're doing here for? And he goes, this is the government-sponsored suicide chamber.
So, in other words, that was your last meal.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you were encouraged. See, the world was so bleak because of everything that was going on, you know, all the famine and the plagues on the earth.
So in other words, they give you a great last meal, they put you in a lazy boy, they put some good stereo headphones on, and then you
get gassed and you just go
and then
to
you
sleep.
Get gassed, uh-huh.
And this gas started to come out, right?
Yeah.
And I said, wait a minute, I don't want to be here, right? And
yeah.
And I went and knocked on the door, you know, before the gas started to come out.
Hey, let me out!
And the person opened up the door, right?
Oh, really?
And he let me out, and he goes, if you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here, right? And then he just let me out. I was like, he didn't make you stay there, right?
Well, see, that's the way it would not be in real life. The way it would be in real life is, let me out, gas is coming, let me out, and slow fade to black, because nobody would be let out. You've had your dinner. You've had your time on the lazy boy and the music. And now, it's good night. That's the way it'd be in real life. In dreams, you wake up. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art, how are you doing?
If you've been listening, why do you even ask?
Well,
I've got a cold. I'm all congested. I glued my lip together. My nose is glued. I've got glue on my hands. Otherwise, it's a great day, sir.
Well, I was just going to say, I missed you the last couple of days. I'm working nights, and I've...
Because I've been sick.
Right. I knew that. As a matter of fact, on your chat line, they're saying they thought you were dead.
I know.
Anyway,
I got to go try to find that press release. Somebody issued a press release saying I'm dead. Now, is that the pits or what?
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
An actual press release?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
I know.
Anyway, I was just going to comment. I was listening to your speaker tonight,
Dr. Stephen Greer.
Right. And I really enjoyed that, and this goes along with a lot of the stuff you get in the... obscure press about hearing all sorts of facts regarding Project Blue Book and the cover-up of that. And
listen, can you hold on through the break?
Sure.
All right, good. Stand by. See if I can go find that press release, and I'll read it to you. Not too many people ever get to do that, do they?
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997. Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired February 21st, 1997.
Good morning, everybody. It is good to be with you. In more ways than one. I'm going to read you my death notice here in a moment. I went and found it. The entire side of my nose is glued. Fortunately, not shut, but, you know, it's just glued.
Now, we take you back to the night of February 21st, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Here, let me read this to you, all right? Subject, Art Bell has passed away for immediate release. Pahrump, Nevada. Radio talk show host Arthur Bell, known to his fans as Art Bell, was pronounced dead at 5:30 a.m. Pacific Time on Thursday, February 20th, 1997. He was 51 years of age. At approximately 4:24 a.m. Pacific Time, Thursday, February 20th, 1997, Art Bell suffered massive chest pain shortly after going off the air and was immediately taken to the Pahrump Medical Center at 1330 Highway 160, only 10 minutes from his home. The cause of death has tentatively been determined to be cardiac arrest, pending further investigation. Attending doctors worked on him for almost an hour before he was pronounced dead. He is survived by his widow Ramona and his teenage son, Arthur Bell Jr. Art Bell began his career in radio at age 11 using a ham radio setup and continued his interest in ham radio up until the end of his life. His interest in ham radio was spurred by his father, a World War II veteran. Art Bell's autobiography, The Art of Talk, gives a full detailing of his life in radio as well as his interest in the paranormal and the NASA space program. Art Bell hosted two shows, Coast to Coast broadcast live weeknights at 11 p.m. Pacific and 2 a.m. Eastern for 5 hours, and Dreamland broadcast live Sunday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific or 10 Eastern for 3 hours. Coast to Coast and Dreamland programs were also available on C-band satellite, SATCOM 1, old F1, transponder 5, 5.8 wideband audio. Both Dreamland and Coast to Coast were carried by stations all over the world. And that's it. Now, it's no wonder people thought I was dead. Doesn't that sound realistic to you, caller? You're back on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Boy. I never talked to a dead guy before.
Well, this is your...
I'm a paramedic by trade.
This is a big opportunity for you then. Do you have any questions?
Well, what I was going to... I was talking before the break there. I've been interested in this stuff ever since I was a kid. I grew up in southern Illinois, and you probably remember the stories of the Missouri Monster.
Oh, sure.
And that tied in with UFOs and their sightings. I remember... I mean, every day, my mom and I would turn on the local radio station to hear what happened the night before. Dogs being carried off in the mouth of these monsters. And,
yep.
But anyway, I don't know how I was going to tie that in other than I would just like to see some sort of resolution to all this now, and it sounds like it's not too far in the coming.
Well, I certainly agree with that. I certainly agree with that, and I appreciate your call, sir. Thank you. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Eric. This is Dave calling from the East Bay area in California.
Hi, Dave. You're going to have to speak up good and loud for us.
Okay, I'll try to do that. Hey, listen, I got to tell you that your disclosure of gluing yourself over the radio has caused me some major grief here.
Why?
Well, I was in bed with the headsets on, listening to your program, and I started convulsing in laughter.
Oh, you thought it was funny?
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. So, you know, maybe it's...
Well, maybe at a distance it's funny, but it wasn't so funny here.
I understand, but it was quite humorous to me.
Well...
And here I was chuckling in bed, and my wife wakes up. She thinks I'm having a coronary.
Huh.
Now, when she finds out I'm listening to your radio program, she smacks me. Now I'm injured.
Oh. Well, I hope she hit you hard. Where'd you get it?
Huh?
Where'd she smack you?
She smacked me on the face.
Good.
Yeah, so I kind of feel like you now.
Tell her thank you.
Yeah, I will.
All right.
In any case, a quick calculation. Our friend that called from Washington about the hole.
Oh, yeah.
That's over 15 miles deep.
You got it.
Can you believe that?
Well, I don't know if I can believe it or not. It's a very intriguing letter. There's no question about it.
Certainly is. I think it requires some further investigation.
I absolutely agree with you. Look, I'll tell you something. I've got the guy's phone number here.
No kidding.
Yep. So.
Yeah, well, that needs a call back for sure.
I agree with you.
Hey, listen, another thing here, too. You know, I never really stopped to think that all these meteorites and asteroids and space junk and satellites that re-enter the atmosphere that spark up our sky.
Yeah.
I never stopped to think that these are alien space vehicles that we're shooting out of the sky with a new high-tech weapon.
It's entirely possible. And as a matter of fact, that's what Dr. Greer said. Yeah, this is really an intriguing letter. I would like to talk to Mel. Mel, if you're out there, how about giving me a call, Mel? Huh? I don't think I want to call Mel at this time of the morning. But I, you know, obviously I'll follow up on this. So, Mel, if you're out there, would you call me? Let me see. What line would be good for Mel to call in on? How about my first-time caller line? Would everybody else be willing to hold up and see if Mel can get through? Mel is the guy with the hole in the ground. This is a remarkable, remarkable story. Sounds possible. So, Mel, if you're out there, call me at the following number now. Area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Everybody else, hold off. I want to talk to Mel, the guy with the hole. And I think I'm going to reread that letter to you. It is absolutely remarkable. Mel only at that number. Casey's awake. I bet he is. Dear Art, I'm writing to you to see if I can get some help from you or your vast listening audience. I live in rural eastern Washington near the Manistash Ridge, wherever that is. M-A-N-A-S-T-A-S-H. Manistash Ridge. On our property, there is a hole. Like the previous owners and the owners before them, we've been throwing our trash in the hole. Apparently the hole has been there as long as anybody can remember. At first I thought it was an ancient well. Anyway, the hole is 9 feet 9 inches in diameter. That's a pretty good sized hole. There is a stone retaining wall around it, and we put a steel door on top to keep anybody from falling into it. As I said earlier, people have been throwing their trash into the, in quotes, well for decades. Furniture, household trash, dead cows, building debris, you name it. The thing is that I noticed the hole never filled up. So I got curious, actually obsessed. I began trying to measure the depth of the hole. I emptied 3 fishing reels of about 1,500 yards of monofilament line trying to determine the depth. Soon I was buying fishing line in bulk. So far I have sunk about 80,000 feet of line into the hole without reaching bottom. My wife works at a local university with a geology department. We hope to get some professional scholarly help in determining the depth of the hole. As far as I can tell, there is nothing else particularly strange about the hole except for 2 other things. 1, dogs refuse to get within 100 feet of the hole. Birds will not sit on the retaining wall or metal door. Another very strange thing is there is no echo when you yell into the hole. Indeed, I've never heard anything hit bottom when tossed in. We once tossed an old refrigerator in and never heard it hit bottom. No crash, no splash, no crunch. I hope your listeners might be able to help with possible explanations. I'm wondering if this, based on my measurements so far, is the deepest hole on Earth. Thanks, Art Bell and listeners. Signed, Mel, and I won't give his last name. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Art, I have to apologize.
Art, you're not Mel?
I am Mel.
You are Mel.
I put that thing on the news group, Art, Fan Art Bell.
You did?
I was
all right, if you're really Mel, there's a way you can prove it.
How's that?
What are the last 2 numbers of the number you sent me?
I don't know.
Then you're lying.
I'm not Mel.
You're lying. Your pants are on fire.
I am.
Goodbye. See? You're not Mel. Didn't think I had a way to test you, did I? Twit, you're probably the kind of guy who wrote my death notice. Idiot. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
I can't believe I'm the first caller that talked about Dr. Greer.
You're not.
Well, that's true. But the thing that I can't understand is, according to his protocol, if 2 ambulances pulled up at his emergency room bay at the same time, and in one was Mother Teresa, and she was in the advanced stages of pneumonia,
yep,
and the other one was a child molester who had confessed his sins to a fellow inmate.
And a crack addict.
Right?
Let's add that. And a crack addict.
Make it as bad as you want, but he was stabbed.
Yeah.
They would treat him first. So, with all the stuff that he presented tonight, and he...
he laid out some pretty heavy stuff.
Well, yes, he did. And he's going after the heart of the beast.
Yep.
Then, what is their protocol? Why are they interested in us? Is it about the quickening? Is it about they want to save us? Is it about...
My guess is, yes, that it is related to what we're headed for if nothing changes. That's just my guess. This quickening business is real. It is, and finally, I have laid it down. Now, I'm going to say this again. I've written a book called The Quickening. Please do not call my publisher. You can't get it yet. So please don't call my publisher. They're being besieged up there right now. Just wait. I'll let you know when it's out. But I feel so strongly about this that this book just tore out of me. And it's going to be available soon. I will let you know. All right? I'll let you know. And it documents carefully what the quickening is. And so is it related to what's coming as a result of that? Yes, I believe probably so. I do believe that. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're obviously not Mel, are you?
No, I am not. I am Mary Lynn, and good evening, Art. I'm calling you to let you know about Egyptian magic with this.
Well, listen, I appreciate the call, but you're going to have to call on another line. This is the Mel line. I want to talk to Mel, the guy with the hole in the ground. So call me on another line. This is the Mel line. The Mel, only Mel call. Area code 702-727-1222. Until I say otherwise, it's the Mel line. It's the guy with the hole in the ground. That wasn't Mel either. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, Art.
Hello.
Hey. Sorry about your glue incident.
Yeah, well.
Hey, this is Joe from Cleellum.
Where?
Washington.
Cleellum.
Cleellum.
Do you know where Manistash?
Yeah, it's pronounced Manastash.
Figures. Manastash,
all right. It's not too far, about 5 miles.
About 5 miles?
Yeah.
Oh, you're close to it then.
Yeah, well, I got a kind of a solution for this guy.
Have you ever heard rumors about this?
No, never.
All right.
But I got a solution, maybe, so he can get a better idea what's down there.
What?
Okay, you know, you can go to the hardware store and buy a hose reel that you wind up your garden hose on?
Sure.
Okay, that thing can hold it a substantial amount of fishing line. So he wouldn't be stuck with using fishing reels to try to reel this up. And I don't know how he's winding 80,000 feet of line in. But...
Well, do you realize, look, at 5,280 feet per mile...
Yeah, I was calculating that. I'm going, that's a, like, what, 16 miles?
That's a lot of, that's a whole lot of miles of, yeah.
40,000, that'd be about 8 miles. That'd be like 16. Anyway, I got an idea. This guy could put some stronger line on it using this big hose reel, like a fishing reel, and... Rig like a downrigger, like a pole and an eye, you know, so you drop it over. Why don't you drop a video camera down there on the end of this line?
With a light. That's a cool idea. That's a cool idea. 80,000 feet. We're talking journey to the center of the earth here. Or if not to the center of the earth, then certainly pretty far down.
Well, you could get, you know, quite a bit of line on it.
Now, he says this hole is, what, 9 foot 9 inches. That's big enough for a human being to be lowered.
Yeah, I just wondered. There's a lot of mines around here.
Oh, there are?
Yeah, a lot of old abandoned coal mines.
Yeah, but
area.
Who, what miner would have... No miner would go that deep.
No, but it might have been connected to an air shaft. A ventilation shaft.
Huh.
There's some substantial stuff here. We got some pretty substantial phenomena stuff here in the mountains.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get here from Mel.
Yeah, we'll see if he's listening, see if he calls in.
All right.
Well, he says about that hose reel idea.
Yeah. Holding it open for any single person is turning out to be almost impossible. And I've got the number here, so I can check it out. I mean, if you're a false Mel, don't call. Some people call just to say stupid things. During the news break here, I'll answer that Mel-only line. All right, I'm not going to do it on the air because people are calling that number now just to get on the air and hear the sound of their own voice saying something dumb. So I'm not going to continue to answer. I'll answer it during the news break. Okay? That's going to be a Mel-only line during the news break. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Ah, good morning, Art.
Hello.
I guess you never do this, and you can't this morning give anybody any lip. This is Will, WTGY, Madison, Wisconsin.
I could mail you some lip.
I have a question recommendation for Dr. Greer.
What's
but
that?
First, please have a show on dirty, filthy airline filters.
I'm going to do it.
I've gotten sick a couple times.
I don't know about it.
It's not, I'll tell you it's bad.
It's not their filters, Will. It's their recirculating air.
No, you're talking.
All right. Anyway, what is the question?
Yep. My question to the good doctor is, should he not do what we in Save the Baltic and Minority Tribes movement did? Namely, should his people one day show up at a UNESCO, United Nations Education Science Committee meeting, hearing in some country held on a related subject, and all of them just began testifying, keeping statements short to the point.
No, what happens to people who do that, Mel, is they get booted out of hearing rooms. No. That isn't the way to do it, Mel. The way to do it is to get the people lined up who are going to testify, approach, and get hearings on the subject. not in effect crashing somebody else's hearing. That'll get you thrown out on your ear, and then you'll complain that you're being silenced, and you're not. You shouldn't have been crashing the other hearing in the first place. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, how you doing? Are you familiar with the overturning of Pyramid Lake, the annual turning of Pyramid Lake?
No.
Well, once a year, the lake turns over, and the bottom comes to the top. And
how does that happen?
I'm not sure. Well, the bottom comes to the top. You can see it, like, annually, a couple weeks out of the year, you can see this. And I'm from Reno myself. And, I heard a story that someone drowned in Pyramid Lake, and they found their body in a sea in the Far East.
Well, you don't have to go that far away to get anomalies. There's a bunch of anomalies right there at Tahoe, you know.
Yeah, and I was wondering, like, there's a real distinct fish in Pyramid called the kiwi fish.
Yeah.
And it's found in Pyramid Lake, and it's found in a couple lakes, I think one in Africa and one in the Far East. And I was wondering if it's related. They found a body that, I guess, he drowned in Pyramid Lake, and they found the subject in a lake on the other side of the world.
Well, again, you don't have to go very far to talk about anomalies. Do you know that there is a creature in Tahoe?
Yes, my
that
uncle
lives in Tahoe. I mean, do you know about that?
I've heard about that. My uncle has a little Cessna, and he flew over Tahoe one night, him and my cousin.
Yeah.
And they saw something swimming in the water. Something big.
Well, there have been a lot of disappearances up in the Reno area, and I'll tell you where those people are. They're at the bottom of Tahoe. In the muck. Where they're stored until it decides that it wants a snack. That's right. So next time you go wading out into Tahoe, you think about that a little bit. Known about the Tahoe creature for a long time. Well, my nose is starting to hurt now. Maybe I can't leave this stuff on here. This is, by any measure, the worst, single worst super glue incident to ever occur. To me, certainly. I've had minor brushes with it before, but this is the worst. All right, we're going to pause here, and I'm going to go look for some acetone or something.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997.
Well, all right. I have got Mel on the line. No thanks to all the Mel imitators on the special Mel line. I finally picked up the phone during the newscast and called Mel's number, and he was just coming in. So I've got Mel on the line. Mel is the guy with the never-ending hole. And we're going to ask him about it here in a moment. I have read that fax now twice on the air. And I've got a lot of follow-up faxes. Here's one entitled, Yet Another Mystery Hole in Eastern Washington. Art, you'll love this. It was sent to me a couple of days ago by email. And it's all about another one on the Indian Reservation in Colville, where there is another mystery hole. Anyway, we'll get to that.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997.
Now to Eastern Washington. I guess this is Eastern Washington. Mel, are you there?
Yes, I am.
First of all, Mel, thank you for answering. What are you doing up at this time of the morning?
Well, after I sent the fax, I'm I'm living in town here now because we had a couple of our buildings out there cave in after the big snows that we had out here last month.
Oh, yes.
And so thereby goes some of the construction debris into the hole. So,
All right. When did you discover this hole?
Well, the hole has always been there. We've been out there for a couple of years now, and you know, the hole has been there since we've been there. It's been there since the previous owner was there, and the previous owner there was quite elderly, and I'd say he was there for a good 30, 40 years before we moved in.
Wow.
And then
and so there's been a thing of throwing stuff down this hole for a long time.
It's been going on, you know, for as long as the hole has been there, I assume.
When nobody knows that, I guess. All right. How do you pronounce the name of your town, Manistash?
Manistash.
Manistash. Right. That's right. Thank you.
Actually, I'm in, right now, I'm in a little town called Ellensburg.
Oh, I know Ellensburg. All right.
You must know about a rodeo here then.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, so, we've been there for several years. And, you know, we take all of our trash, rubbish, anything we have that we have to get rid of, we take it, throw it in the hole. Everyone's throwing their stuff in the hole. The people from around there throw all the stuff in the hole. I mean, it's just been going on for a long time. Well, I got this thinking one day, how come this hole is not filling up? It must be an awfully deep hole.
That's a good thing to consider, sure, as you throw stuff in it for decades, literally.
And so, you know, I used to be I would say pretty close to a professional shark fisherman. So I had a couple of huge fishing reels, went out there and started letting the line down. I figure after one...
Did you weight the line?
Oh, yeah. There's, in fact, the original line is still down there. I have just been adding to the line and keeping track of how much line I have used. So I've not reeled it in.
How much weight is on it?
There's a one-pound weight at the bottom of it.
One-pound weight,
all right. One-pound weight. It's a triangular one-pound weight.
Okay.
And so that's at the bottom of it at first.
So in other words, it would go down kind of like a plumb bob.
Exactly. In fact, I have it rigged across the center of it there, and it goes, you know, goes straight down from the center there. And occasionally I try to move the line there, but when you're moving that much line, you really can't do a whole lot with it. But it seems to, you know, there seems to be, it's not resting against anything at this point here, and it continues to go down freely. And so when I was out there earlier, I let out a little bit more line. And
so you actually went out there tonight after I read this?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, man.
Well, you know, it's not too bad out here right now. It's only about 25 degrees, so it's not too cold.
Have you ever heard anything coming from any sounds or anything?
Well, you know, I mean, the normal thing to do is kind of, like, yell into it there, you know, to see an echo, and I've never heard an echo come out of that thing.
No echo.
At all. You know, that's one of the first things I noticed about it. As usual, I brought the dogs with me. They wouldn't go anywhere near the damn thing, and I went back to the Suburban and hung out over there, so it was kind of... If I try to bring them there on a leash, they'll just dig their feet in. They do not want to go anywhere near the hole. And so that's, I don't know. It's just,
well, you've got miles and miles of,
I'm measuring it by feet. You know, I convert feet to yards, so I don't know
sure.
how many miles that is. I assume it's a fair number of miles, though.
Well, 5,280 feet is a mile, so you really think you've got 80,000?
Yes, yeah, I get the line in 5,000-yard spools, and so I've gone through that many.
Well, you have got a hole, then, that goes, well, you know, you can't say to the center of the earth, but you've got a hole that goes miles and miles and miles into the earth. I would think a university would be out there, boom, just like that.
Well, my wife does work for a local university here, and, you know, we've been talking to them about it, and one of the things is they find it quite incredible that I've let that much line into the ground, but that's what I've been doing.
Have you ever thought of winding it all back up again?
Well, when I let out the first 1,500 yards of line, I reeled all of that back in.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know if I had hit water down there, because I thought that's a lot of feet.
You bet.
You know, that's 4,500 feet of line. Did I hit water? So what I did is I sent down a roll of lifesavers.
Lifesavers?
Yeah, so when it hits the water, the lifesavers will dissolve.
That's true. Oh, I see. So very smart. So
yeah, it's an old shark fisherman's trick there. We used to send our bait out on a balloon attached to a roll of lifesavers, and the bait would go out into the ocean on the tide.
Yeah.
And then eventually the lifesavers would melt and the bait would fall to the bottom. You know, you couldn't cast a big old mackerel out there that far. So
that's amazing. So what do you got any guesses?
I have no idea. I thought it could have been a mine shaft, but the thing about it is the surface part of it's been very well cared for. I mean, someone built a very lovely wall around it. And
all right, tell me about the nature of the side of the walls. In other words, you must be able to look down far enough at least to examine the side of the walls.
Sure. It's stone for about 15 feet down.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's soil, dirt, and then, you know, further down, rock. You know, so, but I can only see to the extent of, really powerful flashlight. I brought halogen lights out there to try to get a better look down there, but the visibility really isn't there. You cannot see much after a while. But it's, it's a retaining wall. I'd say it's about a three and a half foot retaining wall, and it goes down about 15 feet, and then it's...
I'll tell you this much. No matter how powerful a light, and I was even thinking about a laser, when you're talking about 80,000 feet, forget it.
They should have some technology that can give me an idea of how deep this thing is. I mean, obviously, the old fishing line method is only going to go so far.
What we need here is a volunteer. Real, I'm serious. Somebody who would be willing to be lowered into this hole.
To be honest with you, I don't even know if there's any air down that far. I mean,
I wouldn't know about that either.
Or,
that's true.
Kind of pressures we're dealing with. These are things that, are totally beyond my grasp in terms of, knowledge about these things. But
do you own this property?
It's our property, yeah.
Uh-huh. How long have you been working on this?
Well, we've been out there for a couple of years, I said about 4 years now. But this project here with letting down a line, that's only been since last summer here. And it was just, I said, well, how come this thing isn't filling up?
Well, sure.
And, I talked to the neighbors around there, which are, when you're out there in the country, your neighbors are pretty far away, but they all know the hole out there.
They all know about it. So it's
yeah, because they all bring their trash out there.
So the local legend of the hole.
Yeah. This could be an apocryphal story, but one guy claims that he threw his departed canine down into the hole.
Oh, really?
And the story is the guy that did it swears the dog actually came back to him. And he was a hunter.
Really?
He was a hunter. The story is that he was a hunter, and he was out there hunting, and he saw the same dog. He had the same collar. He had the same little metal thing on his collar there. And he said it was the same dog. And he says he knew he threw the dog into the hole. But that's not my dog. That's not my.
It's not your story, but it's a story of a resurrected dog.
Yeah. This is as you can well imagine, this is all Native American land around here. And
one of the lines
of inquiries I'd like to make is, is there anything about this hole in regards to the Native Americans? That's something I haven't really pursued right now. But
if you had a fatal disease, Mel,
yeah,
would you jump in the hole?
I would.
You would?
Based on the dog story, it is in my will.
What?
Should I meet my demise?
That you would be thrown in the hole,
disposed of into the well.
I'm not sure the health department would allow that.
Well, one of the things that I thought about later on is, what if this is like contaminating our water, And, we've had, I'm sure you do this out there in Pahrump, too.
Well,
you have your water checked all the time.
Well, yeah, no personal offense to you, Mel, but if there was a possible contamination problem, I'm sure you're a clean guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you deteriorated, you would possibly produce E. coli or something horrible in the local water supply.
Well, again, so far it hasn't.
If you
were
resurrected.
I mean, the water around that area is absolutely pure water. It is,
And so nothing thrown down, all the old junk and trash,
no.
And nothing has polluted the water.
No, I can't speak for everything that's been thrown down there, but none of that has been showing up in the water that people draw from their wells. I mean, you know, the water is as clean as it's ever been out there. I think we get water that comes off the Cascades or something.
Yeah.
It's just really great. It's really wonderful water.
Mel, you wouldn't be pulling my leg.
No, I'm not. And one of the reasons that I went out to the property tonight, other than it just, you know, it's something that weighs heavily on my mind, I was afraid that after I sent the facts out, that there would be people around there because it's...
Well, there may be, but we have not identified specifically where it is.
Well, there aren't, as far as I could tell, too many big holes like that around, and so at least the people in my neck of the woods are familiar with it, and I kind of almost expected to see a small party of people.
Well, there may be. Now, I mean, you know, come daylight, there may be. But remember, folks, this is private property. This is Mel's
home. It is posted, too.
Oh, it is. All right. There you are. So without knowing exactly where it is, I wouldn't look for that to occur, but there is going to be substantial curiosity about it now, Mel.
Well, I think I've, let you know as much as I know about it. I certainly want to find out more. I was mostly curious about the depth of it. I mean, how deep is the deepest hole anyone has ever found?
Well, I've never heard of anything deeper than this.
You know, I thought maybe this would be like Guinness World Book of Records type hole here. As far as things I thought it would be like, could have been like an old mine.
Well, now here's a couple things to think about. I've heard as you go down into the earth, Mel, that it gets hotter.
Ooh.
Right? So
yes.
You would think that your fishing line with a weight on it at some point would melt or, you know, something, but there's still weight on it, huh?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
The line is not moving freely. I mean, you know, it still falls under its own weight.
Oh, that's amazing. Let's let some of the audience ask you questions.
Okay, I think I can do that.
All right, because I just might be missing something. Now, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel, who's got the hole in Washington.
Hello.
Hello. Do you have any questions for Mel? Hello? Okay, well, I guess that guy gave up. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hello. Oh, you got a guest now?
I did. Well, I mean, sort of.
I was calling about something else.
All right. Well, thank you. First time caller line. You're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Mel.
Yes, Mel.
Oh, Mel. I wanted to talk to Art. I'm on the wrong line.
Yeah, you are.
I'm sorry. That's the 222 line.
1-222 is first time caller line.
That's what I thought I was calling.
Well, that's what you got. But, we're talking with Mel right now. I'm trying to... He's the guy with the hole in Eastern Washington.
Okay. I just have something for Art.
All right.
Mel.
Well, call me back when we're into open lines. Wild card line, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Dave in Milwaukee.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, I was listening to this. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I just wanted to let you know, I looked up an encyclopedia, and the Marianas Trench, which is the deepest hole we know about...
That's in the ocean, right?
Right. It's 36,000 feet deep.
So this is, certainly over double that already.
Right. And it also says, under mining, that with current technology, we can only go down about 1,600 feet.
Wow.
That is great.
So you've got something here that already qualifies for Guinness.
That's wonderful. I like that. That's great. You said 1,600 feet?
That's what they said, yeah. 1,640 feet, it says, with current technology is about as deep.
Wow.
All right. Thank you very much for that information. So already we now learn that you may have a Guinness qualifying hole there, no question about it.
Jeez.
But I want to know... Inquiring minds want to know. I would think even if we just had somebody lowered past the 1,600-foot mark to see what's down there.
That would be cool, but it wouldn't be me.
You wouldn't do it?
I wouldn't go down in the hole.
At least not while you're still alive.
Then I will, you know. But I mean, you know, for the time being, no.
I understand. All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with
what
Mel.
What if the rope broke?
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Mel?
Yeah, hi.
Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm in Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas, all right.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that you would like somebody to be lowered down into the hole.
That's right.
I would be willing to do that.
See, there you go, sir, a volunteer.
We've got a volunteer.
Yeah, I mean, obviously under certain conditions.
Like what?
Just a cage, for one.
A cage?
Yeah, just in the event that there's some kind of weird
subterranean
thing eating all of this garbage down there. Obviously, I would want to be in some kind of a cage.
Well, what makes you think, though, that anything that could gobble up, say, a refrigerator
wouldn't hit the cage? Well, I would have, obviously, a very powerful light, and I'd be able to see it at some point before it's too late.
So we'd have radio contact with you, and we could hear you scream, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds too much
or
like
an
Jaws.
Or an instant up button. An instant up button. On back up. You know, at like a high speed.
And you could take a camera with you.
Yeah.
With a light and show us everything as it.
Yeah, I've got a pretty adventurous nature to me anyway. Plus I have a very appealing draw to the supernatural for some reason. Anyway, just naturally in my personality.
Well, nobody's saying there's anything supernatural about this, but.
Well, the dog story would indicate something supernatural.
Well, that's true.
Everyone's dogs are scared of the hole.
Yeah.
It's not just my dogs.
No, that's a very good point. In other words,
other
dogs won't go anywhere near the hole, huh?
Yeah, my dogs will follow me everywhere. I mean, you know, no matter where I go, they're, you know.
Except
to the well.
Uh-huh.
Now, you call it.
Is this possibly at a grid point on the planet?
I wouldn't know about grid points, other than
do you know anything about the grid points?
Yes, thank you, sir, from Austin. I've heard about grid points, but I would have no way of knowing where they are and whether this is one of them. I wouldn't know. Now, this is just a hole. And he's right, there was something a little paranormal about it when you consider the dog story. I tell you. Mel, hold on, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Stand by. We'll be right back to you.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997.
You and your friends are worried about me. I'm having lots of fun. With a deck of 51, smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. Last night I dressed in tails, pretended I was on the town. As long as I can dream, it's hard to slow the swinger down. So please don't give a thought to me, I'm really doing fine.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from February 21st, 1997.
And my guest is an impromptu fellow named Mel who sent me a fax about a hole in the ground that just keeps going. He needs Pat Boone. Where's Pat Boone when you need him?
Now we take you back to the night of February 21st, 1997, on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Well, here's somebody from Las Vegas, Mike, listening to KXNT, who suggests that we throw a cat down the hole. Listen to the cat scream as it goes down. It's a horrible idea. I don't know about people who do that, throw down a cat. Oh, man. And you hear the echoes sort of going down. I'm not for that at all. All right, Mel, here comes some more people. First time caller line, you're on the air with Mel with the hole.
Art, why don't you have somebody, I know you're connected with somebody that's got radar available. Radar would be the way to go to find out the depth.
Well, would radar go down a hole
absolutely.
Without hitting the sides?
You don't need a fancy radar to do it.
You mean like a, what about sonar? No, I guess
no,
that's...
No, sonar you couldn't use because you don't have anything for the medium to go through, like underwater for sonar.
Yeah.
But radar would definitely work.
In other words,
I was just curious if he'd call a government agency to come out.
But wouldn't radar return a hit from the sides of the hole and bounce around down there?
No. Purely directional radar. What do you use when you're driving down the highway?
Well, you use radar, but
exactly.
That's out in the open. That's not in. I don't know enough about radar to know if that would work, but it's a good idea.
Well, I've used it for years, but that's a way to try it.
All right, I want. How about a cop's radar?
I'm not sure if they'll return an echo off of that. Possible.
All right. Well,
it would tell you how fast the hole was going, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Tell you how fast. Cute, Mel. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
This is pretty funny. Good evening, Mel.
Hi.
My name is Barry. I'm just hop, skipping, and jumping away from you down here in Yakima.
Oh. All right.
I'm awful surprised I haven't heard of this before now.
Well, now, Mel hasn't made this public as far as I know. Have you, Mel?
No, it's just on my land.
Oh, I see.
So my neighbors know about it.
But, well, I mean, wait. This is the first public announcement of the whole?
As far as I know, there is no newspaper accounts of it, you know, not in the Daily Record or in the Herald.
Well, there will be
the
now.
Herald.
There will be now.
Oh, well. As usual, you've heard it here first, folks, on
That's
our
right.
bill.
That's
before I get serious, I just wanted to kind of lighten things up here and ask if you'd considered making a contract with the Refuse Collection Department from Yakima County. You could probably make a killing on that.
You know, I read an article in the paper how they wanted to close down our local dump out here, and... I almost seriously suggested.
All right, listen, here's another possibility for you. Do you know that I live near an area where there's supposed to be a high-level nuclear dump? Now, if this is really, in effect, a bottomless pit,
whoa,
you may have something that the U.S. government wants.
So I could, like, rent this thing out.
You're damn right.
And move away as
they
quick
bring,
as possible.
Well, yeah.
Anyways, I wanted to mention here, we've got many mediums of technology, and the gentleman who suggested radar, I think, was onto something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say for instance that Guinness came out and was going to, you know, they're pretty thorough with their investigation before they're going to print you.
Yeah, that's
true. But anyways, maybe the way to go is to have someone lower in a sensor's package, which is something that measures for noxious gases, temperature, and I'm sure they could focus a radar, you know, probably pencil thin,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just hook it up to a endless supply of a cable and lower it down. That'd be awful interesting.
Look, I'd be interested, even if we don't get a hold of the guy from Austin, to lower a camera and a light down.
You know, when I was out there this evening, it's kind of a
sort of a full moon out there. And one of the things that occurred to me is maybe this has some sort of astronomical type type thing.
What do you mean, Mel?
Well, you know, it's like, you know, how, you know, the various pyramids and things in Egypt, you know, are supposed to be lined up on various star systems or whatever.
Well, was it a thing like where the moonlight was shining into the hole?
Well, no, but I, you know, I just, you know, happened to notice, you know, the full moon, and all of a sudden
moon,
it just sort of put two and two together there, you know.
You've never felt drawn to the hole personally, have you? I mean, in terms of, you know.
You mean in terms of some sort of spiritual involvement or?
No, suicide,
no,
suicide.
No. I keep the lid on it there because it's an attractive nuisance. You don't want local kids there climbing on the wall and falling in.
There's actually no way of knowing whether people have gone in. Because they'd be gone.
Not in my
down with a refrigerator.
You know. Again, if I can find out something from the local Native Americans on, you know, maybe with some sort of burial thing or, you know, I mean,
and you can drop a big rock and you can hear it going down, probably bouncing off the walls or something, but you never hear a splash.
You never hear a splash. I've even taken like old television tubes, you know, the picture tubes, and
you've dropped picture tubes down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I've dropped. I hate to say this here, but I've dropped more than one of them down there, and I've never heard it implode or anything. Nothing.
EPA, you probably shouldn't say that on the air.
Well,
they'll come and get you for that. I mean, TV tubes.
Well, it is my...
It's your own property, I know, but
yes.
These days, Mel, doesn't make any difference. I mean, tomorrow morning you're liable to wake up and there'll be tanks and Boutros Ghali will
be
there. Yeah,
that's true.
All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel.
Hi, WKXY, Sarasota.
Sarasota, Florida,
yes. Let me say, let's throw Mike from Las Vegas down the hole.
Really?
Right? Yeah. Okay, you know, he's the cat. Okay. I do have a question for Mel. You're a fisherman, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever felt a tug on the line? And if you did, what would you do?
I don't have a hook on it. There's just a large, there's a 1 pound weight.
Yeah, but she's saying if something obviously was pulling on that line.
What would I do?
Yeah.
What'd you do?
I'd run.
Yeah.
I'd seal that damn thing up and I'd never get near it again.
Yeah, I'd put the lid down on it at that point there and say, that's it, the dump is closed.
And at any point, did you ever pull up the weight and look at it?
Yeah, I asked that too.
The first series of letting down line, when I got about 4,500 feet down there, I had a roll of lifesavers down on the bottom to determine if there was any water down there. And of course, if there was water, the lifesavers would melt.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do that. But since that time, I've let the line continuously go down. I've just spliced on to the end of the line and continued.
Yeah, just trying to find out where the bottom is.
Yeah, that was my main question. It's like, how deep is this thing? Where does it go? You know, well, it goes into the earth, but you know, how far does it go before it'll stop?
Okay.
You know.
All right, thank you, ma'am. I think that a light and a video camera. I mean, Mel, you could have a special as you got down past, what did they say was the deepest hole, 1,600 feet?
1,600 feet.
As you got down past 1,600 feet, you'd have a network special on your hands, Mel.
That would be good. I'm thinking about putting up a web page on it there if I can get one of those.
What's his name? Rivera would come.
and they'd lower him into the hole.
Only if we were all lucky. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Yeah, this is Terry from Bremerton.
Hello, Terry. Oh, you're up in Washington again, yeah.
You're right. Well, I was wondering about how much does 15 miles of fishing line weigh?
I have no idea. I'm just letting that sucker go down. I have not really.
Well, what if you've already hit the bottom and you got a pound of fishing line on it?
That's right.
You're letting it down.
Yeah,
I should
weigh one of those spools because I'm getting them in 5,000-yard spools.
Yeah.
And so I should weigh a spool and sort of deduct the cost of the spool itself and see what that would add up to in terms of how much that weighs.
So in other words, it could have hit bottom some time ago and simply the pure weight of the line.
Right.
It doesn't feel like it is reach bottom there. There's no slack in the line.
But even so, well, there might not be with that much weight. But, you know, even if that's true, caller, think
yes.
about it. He's still got the deepest hole ever heard of in the world.
Yeah, he does. But the weight of the line would keep pulling the line down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But there would be so much line down there by then. But
what pound test line is it?
I'm using 20 pounds.
Do you think you have 20 pounds of line on it already?
Pardon me?
Do you think you have 20 pounds of line in the hole already?
I'm sure there's more line than that.
It would break by then.
You know, we're talking how many?
There must be a lot of tension.
I've got 20 spools of line.
A lot of tension on that.
Yeah.
20 spools of line on there.
Wow.
And it's still hanging on there. You know, that weight continues to go down. I don't know if there's a way of weighing that thing, you know, as it is.
Yeah, I was just interested in how much the line would weigh itself.
I could probably do that. You know, get one of those hanging scales.
Sure.
And the spring operating stuff, and just sort of knot it off up there.
Yeah, why not? It's worth a try. And the other thing that's worth a try, I suppose, although you'd be cranking for a long time, would be to crank it back up again.
Well, no, I could just weigh like one spool of line and multiply it. I think I'm up to about like 18 spools of line right now. So, you know, it wouldn't be too hard to get a weight on it.
All right. You'll report back to us on that?
Yeah, I can. Sure, definitely.
All right.
Definitely.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Mel. Hello?
Yes.
Hi, where are you?
I'm Bellingham, Washington.
Yes. Oh, Washington again. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I was wondering, what was the... Mel said that he had a triangular one-pound weight on the end of the line.
You're right.
Yeah, I was wondering what elements was that weight, or is that weight composed of?
It's a standard lead fishing weight.
Mm-hmm. You know, you were talking earlier... Al was talking earlier about the heat when you get deep into.
Well, I was speculating. You know, I saw the movie with Pat Boone about the journey to the center of the earth. It's supposed to get hot when you go down, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, what about the magnetism? You know, that's a factor you consider also.
The magnetism?
Yes.
You're off into a territory that I can't answer. Mel, are you gonna contact your wife? Works for a university,
yeah, huh? Local university.
Have they, I mean, did she tell them about this? And if so, what did they say?
Well, the people she talked to, because I nag her about it occasionally, say,
sure.
You know, they're telling her, you don't have a whole day that deep, you know.
So, in other words, they don't believe her?
No. No. What I'm trying to do is, you know, kind of entice them out there and just bring something out there to measure how deep it is.
Well, Mel, would you be willing to talk to, like, newspaper people or... television people, they're crazy. They'd send someone down there.
Well, I know I'm talking to a lot of people on the phone right now and on the radio, but I'm not sure if I'd want to have a TV crew and a, you know.
So you're not sure you want that kind of publicity?
No, you know, I mean, you know, I'd be happy to, you know, like I say, you know, I could put together a website on it and, you know, keep people, you know, informed about what's going on, because, you know, I'm sort of making this my...
people would accuse you of going to the well one time too many.
That's probably true.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hello there. That is absolutely amazing. All right. This is Ken from Scottsdale.
Yes, sir.
And one thing I wanted to mention about that, when you mentioned about a car that had apparently fallen from the sky.
The Chevrolet, yeah.
Right. I recall reading about many, many incidents in England and throughout Europe of nuts, raining nuts of different kinds. I mean, Brazil nuts and hazelnuts.
Sometimes it rains nuts on my program. Listen, we're not talking about things falling from the sky right now. We're talking about a hole.
Right, I know. Well, it was open lines a minute ago. Now you switched it.
Well, I've switched it because I have Mel.
Oh, well, anyway, as far as the hole goes, isn't it possible there could be like an aquifer or something and there water
well,
or something?
Mel has not found any water. Any water at all. He lowered lifesavers in, and the lifesavers came back, and that was how far, Mel?
4,500 feet.
4,500 feet. And the lifesavers came back intact, right?
Oh, yeah. They were absolutely dry. They weren't dissolved. They were just perfect.
That's pretty definitive. First time caller line, you're on the air with Mel. Hi.
Mel?
Hi.
Hi, this is Conrad in Grass Valley, and I've got some thoughts about this whole well problem.
Sure.
First of all, if he's putting line down the well...
Wait a minute, sir. We've got to stop this because people are going to call it a well. There has never been any water found in this hole.
Okay, a hole.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. If he started out with a one-pound weight and he starts adding fish line to it...
Right.
...then the amount of weight down the hole increases. All right, now, if he knows the weight of the line on a per-foot basis, as he puts more weight down the hole... If he could measure the total strain on the top of load on the top of the line, he would know if any of that line was draped on anything. See, the thing is, once he gets a fair amount of line
that's a good point.
The 1 pound weight on the end is insignificant. And he wouldn't even. It could be hung up on something or laying on the bottom or something, and he would never know it.
Yeah, but he put lifesavers down 4,500 feet. So even if what you're saying is true, this is still, by a long shot, the deepest hole ever.
That assumes it's even that deep. The one thought that you had that I thought was very valid was the temperature as you go farther down into the ground.
Well, that's what they... I think that's right, isn't it?
Oh, yes, of course. By the time it's down... 4,000 feet in the ground, or the temperature would probably be well over 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
If the 100, the monofilament and the lead would certainly survive 100 degrees just fine. You're probably right. That is interesting. Mel, I say that we got to put a person down there, a volunteer.
Not a cat.
No, not a cat. No cats. But a person, maybe like a media person, one of these anchors from maybe one of the Seattle Como stations or something, lower them down.
Oh, boy. I'm intrigued. Again, I've been running line down there for quite a while, and I don't think I've hit bottom. The weight seems to be hanging plumb over there, and... like I say, we've been throwing things down there for a long, 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 long time, and you know, this hole has not filled up. I don't know. Maybe it's getting incinerated down there. I don't know.
All right, and you would swear on all that is sacred to you that what you have told us is the absolute, unadulterated truth.
This is my hole, and this is the truth about it.
God, it's an amazing story, Mel. Who else besides your wife, the people you've tried to talk to at the university and yourself, I guess your neighbors know about the hole?
Oh, yeah. There's probably a good, not families, but individuals, probably a good 20 people that use the hole regularly.
To throw junk into.
Yeah, yeah. It's always been done.
Well, I remember when I was a kid, I used to like to throw stuff off bridges and stuff like that, and into holes just to hear it hit bottom.
Never heard anything hit. I mean, if you hit the side, of course, but if you just drop it straight down.
Nine and a half feet.
It goes straight.
9.5 feet is certainly large enough so that if you got in the center and dropped it straight down, it would go straight down, right?
Yeah, you can just, you know, lean right over there and get it going straight down. You know, and as far as anything I can see, visually, you know, with the, you know, halogens and flashlights.
The light just what? Fades away into blackness?
Yeah. You've got nothing after a while, you know. Can see as far as the beam will go, and that's it. You know?
Does anybody have any theories about, you said a dog was thrown into the hole dead and then came back alive again, right?
The story is the guy was out hunting and he saw his dog and he knew it was his dog because it was the same dog. It had the same collar. It had the same tag on it and the whole thing.
Oh, man. Does anybody have any theories about what properties would be in the hole to resurrect a canine?
Gosh, I, I, I'd like to think that this is something like really benign. Like, I mean, cows have gone down there. I mean, I haven't heard any cows coming back, and or at least that you would know. But I don't.
Well, it's not the creator. Well, look, we're out of time. Mel, you get the honors from near the hole in Washington State. Tell them.
From the hole, it is good night to everyone from coast to coast.
And beyond. Thank you, Mel. Stay in touch. Stay in touch. From the high desert to the cosmos out there. Good night.